I was tired of Stanford. We've been getting together too long. Like a worn-out recording of a Jeff Jarrett song. So while Vince lay there sleeping, I read the Observer in bed. And in the personal columns, there was a bullet I read. If you hate her, a Karan is. And listening to Mike today. If you're not into Hogan, and you hate Bobby the Brain. If you like Booker T at midnight, and squashing cruises like grapes. Then I got the job that you're looking for. Write to Ted and escape. Didn't think about my ratings. I don't even know what they mean. But me and my old ratings had fallen into that same old dull routine. So I wrote to the Observer, dedicated it to Ted. Though I'm no Lanny Poffo, I'll suck my in bed. Yes, I hate her, what Karan is. I fucking hate Mike Tenay. I created Gangrel's Brood and pushed Steph and Shane. I gotta meet you by tomorrow noon to cut through Patterson's red tape at this place called the Gadden where I'll plan my escape. So I waited with high hopes as Ted walked into place. I knew that stash in an instant. I knew the fat on his face. I said, Ted, this is kind of shady. He said, I want a coup. Then we laughed for a moment. And I said, I never knew that you ate her, a Karan is. And that prick, Mike, today. You want to give me a promotion? And then sell the company to Shane? Yeah, I'll push Booker T at midnight. And then I'll bury Dallas Page. I'm the writer you're looking for to make sure WCW dies. Because WCW must die.
North-South Connection Podcast Network. Guys, it's time to kill this thing. Johnny, are you there?
I am here, and I am horrified.
So, we did kind of one, just kind of like, oh, you know, WCW must die. We'll watch the reboot. And we kind of watched it and looked at it. Anyway, I think it was a fun romp. Would you say it was a romp?
It was a romper, stomper, graveyard destruction.
Yes.
That's a direct Sting quote.
it was a mess, just like a lot of Sting quotes from this era. And look, Johnny C, I'm Aaron from TNA Never Dies and such. And look, we're going to go on this journey now, but I think because – so Russo's trying to kill this company, right?
I mean, I definitely – I'm not going to sit here and create a conspiracy theory that he's like a plant, but I do think he's just, you know – dicking around doing whatever he wants, and he doesn't give a shit what happens. He may be he may have it in his sights to kill.
Do you think he's maybe so disillusioned with wrestling after being demanded demanded to write SmackDown that he's like, fuck it, I'm gonna kill this whole industry?
He's inserted a bomb into WCW's neck. And you know, when WCW pisses him off, he's got the detonator.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's going to blow it up because within, what is it? This is April. So within 10 months, the company's dead.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about because, you know, there's still people in the arenas at this point. I would damn near say that even though it's Chicago, the crowd that we had last episode was pretty hot for the product. I mean, they weren't quiet.
No. And what they did last time, too, at the very least, was interesting.
Yes, it was. I don't want to say it was water cooler conversation because I think that's a really played out term. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely like call your buddies. Did you see what they did? Like, that we have something to talk about now.
There's no champions.
Yes.
So this continues. And now I'm going to be honest here. I have never, ever, ever watched an episode of Thunder.
You have clearly never had lonely nights at home then, because I've seen Thunder, but I've not seen this one.
I've had lonely nights at home. Don't get me wrong. I think it's because I don't think we got in Canada. I don't think we ever got Thunder. I think, I mean, someone will correct me on that if that's not true. But, I mean.
Do you guys get TBS? Like, could you watch the Atlanta baseball team?
No.
Whose name I don't know. No. Okay.
You don't know the name of the Atlanta Braves? The Atlanta Braves?
Okay, so I do, but I was trying to be, I don't want to call it sensitive because I don't think there's oversensitivity there, but, you know, I don't want to fucking start anything. The Atlanta baseball team, the Washington football team, the Cleveland Guardians of the Galaxy.
They should have called them Guardians of the Galaxy.
I mean, they would have sold a lot more merch. Let's put it that way.
I heard somebody saying this person was outraged. They were changing the name at all, which I thought was kind of funny. And they're like, we should call it the Spiders because that's what their original team name was.
Yes, I've heard that too.
But who wants to be named after something that everybody hates?
Well, I mean, if you're going – okay, so the cinematic equivalent of the Cleveland Guardians that jumps to my head is obviously the beautiful film from the late 80s Major League where they're lovable losers anyway.
Right.
You know, I mean, so to lean into that, I think would have been great, but I don't know. They couldn't call them like the Cleveland Wild Things. I mean, imagine the synergy there. I don't know.
From the 30-year-old film.
Dude, don't even. That 30-year-old, but hey, you want to talk about this 28-year-old wrestling show? I mean, people are, God.
Yeah, but we're not naming the wrestling show going forward.
It's 18, not... 18. No, fuck. What year is it?
It's 2000.
This is
21. It's easy. It's 21.
You know what? I've been under the weather.
Fair.
So I'm just going to.
Fair.
Okay.
Fair.
All right. I fucked up, guys. I don't do math.
It's like calling a team like the Nashville Navigators after like Flight of the Navigator. Like it's a movie that happened once in the 80s.
I love that movie. That's so random.
I love it.
I think that movie takes place in Florida, though. What a good soundtrack. The same guy that does the Avengers did Flight of the Navigator.
Really?
So there you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the world famous Avengers theme, the song that even non nerds know.
Bum, bum, but bum, bum,
you know
that one.
Exactly. You know, like does anybody else hum that to themselves, like when they're taking like a really hard shit, or you know, or if they just got like a promotion at work, or they're like bum bum. Bum, bum, bum.
I masturbate thinking about it.
You don't want to know what I think about.
There you go. Look, we're going to kill WCW. Vince Russo is going to kill it. So we're going to look tonight at the April 12th, 2000 episode of Thunder. And I thought it'd be interesting to look at it from the perspective of, if I was trying to kill this show, what are the things that I would do? Right?
Hire Vince Russo.
Number one, hire Vince Russo. I'm telling you right now, though. One of the things I wouldn't do is open the show the way they did. So they they start the show with like this. When you see Vince Russo and Eric Bischoff arriving in a Porsche, and it's all about we don't have champions, and they're yelling about David Arquette, and Russo, right away, I don't know if this angered you, but it angered me. He's wearing a baseball jersey without a shirt underneath.
Oh yeah, I mean he's okay. So I'm of two minds of this. I like the chest hair poking out because it's like the Tom Selleck Magnum PI I'm a badass thing. But the flip side is Vince Russo is no Tom Selleck.
No shit. If I can't think of anyone further from Tom Selleck than Vince Russo.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I don't. Although they both know Courtney Cox.
That's true. Maybe Andy Dick is a little bit further from. Tom Selleck, the Vince Russo.
Hmm.
But like, I've never even seen a baseball player wear a shirt, like the baseball jersey without a shirt on underneath.
My sister was at a party one time and Andy Dick was really drunk and trying to hit on her. and she said he was a skis ball, if I'm not mistaken.
You're kidding. Him? No yeah. way.
Well, yeah, but it's just like, I mean, that is not a good representation of our American soldiers, okay? I know Andy Dick was a soldier. I saw the movie. In the army now, that's not how they are, guys. I want you to be aware of that.
At first, I thought you were gonna say my sister was at a party wearing a baseball shirt without a shirt underneath. I thought that's where the story was going, and I'm like, oh, okay, well.
I mean, maybe if there was a baseball themed party, but no, yeah. When you said Andy Dick, or maybe it was Tom Green, it was one of those. She was at a party with Tom Green and Andy Dick, but they were both there. And I'm not like trying to, you know, this is like not cool in retrospect. I'm just saying that, like,
you're not name dropping like Brad Pitt, you know, like.
Right? But it happened, and because she spent a summer in Los Angeles doing an internship, and I was like, so those are the people that creep you out. I'm not surprised, and I'm glad you made it back in one piece.
Yeah, I worked in a comic book store, and Sam Jackson rented a bunch of anime porn from it.
You're full of shit. How have you never told that story before?
Because it's never really come up, but that's my biggest celebrity meet. Anyway, I'll tell it one day, but that's actually true. It's very true. What I like about this segment right away, and why I don't think it's very good for killing the company, is number one, there's not a million guys in the ring this week.
No, it's focused. It's actually – as you said, we're going to talk about what's killing the company. This is like a shot of adrenaline. This is – but in a good way.
Yeah. Like, there's good energy here. How would you describe Scott Steiner's body?
Slightly less sculpted than my own, but still very impressive.
Pretty impressive. I mean, we all have to have goals, right?
He's so over too, Jesus. Like, and we'll talk about it later when he actually comes out to wrestle, but he is,
yeah.
Like, I don't understand why, like, building the they eventually build the company around him, but like as they're on life support, it's a bad call to not do it now.
Well, and we're building the company around Jeff Jarrett now.
Oh God. Mm. And is he's not even out there with him in the opening segment, is he?
No, I don't think so. And Eric,
yeah, it's like, yeah,
go on.
Well, I was going to say that, like, they start by talking. They're basically doing a victory lap. Last night was impressive. Eric, did this get you? You know, even though this segment and what they're doing is positive for WCW, they're the continuity between like the announcers, the performers, and everything is so fucked up because this was taped the night after Nitro because they, you know, it's no longer live. But you know, you've got. I think Bischoff says last night we shocked the world. And then later on commentary, arbitrarily about something else, Schiavone says something about how like two nights ago, Hulk Hogan was like hurt. And like, so there's no consistency. Like the announcers are pretending it's Wednesday and Bischoff's clearly it's Tuesday.
I feel like nobody told them what was happening.
And that's so WCW.
Yeah, like, okay, when is it airing? It doesn't matter. Just say whatever. That's kind of how I feel. The meeting went
down.
Can
you imagine? McMahon would literally, like, send them back out to redo the segment.
Oh, fuck. He'd slit Michael Cole's throat on television and, like, stare into the camera as he dies slowly. Like, he'd stare. Like, he'd Gus Fring that guy from from Breaking Bad and the meth lab.
Yeah, so...
Bischoff's going on about Nitro being full of classic screwdrops and car wrecks. Like, this is not what I want from Nitro.
No, and it's funny too because, you know, I would usually think a car wreck would be a bad thing. I know it's like the Crash TV, like he's kind of leaning into that, but he's not the shit he's saying doesn't really make him a heel either. Not yet. He'll eventually get there, but this is just kind of their we're happy, you know, the new blood is here, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and then Kidman's talking about, I pinned Hulk Hogan, I busted him open, I ended his career. And I love that, like, it's like he's just admitting openly to attempted murder. Like, it's fine. Like, I almost killed this guy, right? And then he's like, you should be thanking me so you don't have to sit through any more of his boring-ass matches.
Yes. It is, but I don't think the jury would convict because he has some good points. A lot of 2000 Hogan WCW matches were boring as hell.
Right.
And the Hulk Hogan character is very stale. He's 3-0 against Hogan. And I think he's on a bit of a hot streak. So I'm sure that, you know, last night, because it's the next night, him and Torrey Wilson had a romp.
No kidding.
So, I mean, the Kidman never has a reason to not be on top of the world.
No, that dude is got it all going. And then we get Mr. Russo, the role. At first, I'm like, what is he wearing around his neck? Why is it so big? But then it occurred to me it's the Rolex he took from Ric Flair, which I thought was fine.
It's the Rolex I got from Flavor Flav.
I ain't mad at all. Russo shits on the town. He drops a John Denver reference, and Douglas is like,
"Is he dead? Am I supposed to care?"
Yeah, like, who cares? And then he goes, "Number one, I am the Batman." Might be the dumbest thing ever said on wrestling television.
You bite your tongue. This is my favorite moment in Vince Russo history. When he proclaims, "I am the Batman." How did you watch this?
I watched it on the network. From the Netherlands.
There you go. I watched it on Peacock. My episode was a little bit different. He gets on the microphone. He talks about John Denver. He makes that really inappropriate, joke about him.
About it being dead.
But then it cut to like outside of Madison Square Garden.
Oh.
And there was a sign on the marquee that said wrestling. And there was a man, a woman, and their little boy, and they were walking out of the arena. And the mom says to the little boy, "Oh, I'm so sorry that your favorite wrestler, Ric Flair, wasn't there, but we had to leave early. But we didn't have to leave early." And the little boy's like, "Hey, you bitch, you shut up. I do what I want. Now let's go through this alley real quick so we can get home. I got to go call Dave Meltzer and tell him what's going on at the arena." And then, they walked down the alley and it kind of faded to black and there were some gunshots. And then we were back in the arena and he yelled, "I am the Batman."
Fuck.
So,
you know what's crazy? Because in mine, it cut to a trapeze act and Ed Ferrara was watching his family fall from the tightrope to the ground. And he was like an orphan. And then, well, anyway, we know the rest of the story.
Yeah. So, it's just that's one of the reasons I like that you watch it one way and I watch it another, because I feel like sometimes I get the director's cut.
Yeah.
Yes. It's ridiculous. I am the Batman. But it's here's the thing. Russo gives himself the best shit. That's going to be a theme throughout this entire run. He's got the feud with Flair. Like, I don't, he gives himself the best stuff. Obviously he does the same thing in other promotions. I feel like every Tuesday I think about what he's doing to other promotions. I don't know why that is.
It's because every Tuesday TNA Never Dies drops with myself, Jenny, and JT watching TNA from the very, very beginning. And it's been quite a ride, and it's a lot of Russo crap too. When I watch TNA and then watching this show, I've actually had a couple of people reach out and like with some real care for my sanity doing both of these. Which I really appreciate. But it's like it really is a different product, because TNA you can kind of almost excuse, because they're doing what they can with who they have. Here, he's got major stars.
Well, I'm not going to spend more time talking about my love for the Batman. Check out my Twitter at @SaveMarthaRusso. That's right.
My God.
For more information on my Vince Russo Batman memes, he says that Flair's going to be his New York bitch.
I know.
I was once an Alaskan bitch, but I've never been a New York bitch. Can you please explain to me what the difference is?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously the New York ones are much more frigid. You'd think it's the opposite, right? But those Alaskans are just,
I can see that.
They're much more free. They're just a freer people, right?
Well, they're further away from, regulations and things like that.
Society,
I mean,
right?
Yeah. And everything's, like 49 cents extra. There's no value. I once read there's no value meal in Alaska.
Bullshit. They probably, none of them probably eat fast food anyway, because they have like real, they're probably eating bison and each other.
Oh, boy. We just lost the Alaskan audience.
No, I you know what? I've always wanted to go, to be honest. I have a friend who moved from Montreal to the Yukon because his wife got a job.
From Montreal to Yukon, parlez-vous français?
Parlez-vous en yeah. So his wife got a job as a nurse, and he just went insane up there. Like he started posting videos of himself running around town in a giant diaper. Anyway, he's a crazy person to begin with. Did you?
And I, yeah, and people say The Shining is fiction. Go on.
The wall in the ring is so much bigger. But before I jump on, also on Tuesdays, Jacob Williams, Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast. You should definitely check it out if you're at all interested in the Ruthless Aggressive era. Because Jake's bringing in a new guest every single other week on Tuesdays. And they're breaking down everything that's going on in the WWE in the year 2000. Started in 2002 with the Ruthless Aggression speech in the draft. And he's right now at the fucking nadir of Raw. It's Triple H show on Raw and the SmackDown 6 on SmackDown. So check it out every other Tuesday on North South. The wall is so much bigger than everyone else in the ring. But I will say WCW was smart to cover his leg tattoos.
Yeah, oof. Yeah, his shoulder ones too, like on the back of his. He just doesn't. It doesn't make him look. I mean, I know the wall's not really much of a character, but it. When he, at least when he was wearing the suits and stuff like that, like there was a, there was something to grab onto. And when he starts cutting off the sleeves and you start seeing the ink and you start to realize, oh, he's just some jackass in the you know. I mean, I'm just saying, like I have a bunch of tattoos too. That doesn't make someone a jackass, but he looks just like everybody else. Oh, it's just test. You know, I mean, he's just everybody else. He's the same.
He got the tattoos that everybody gets. He just got them on his thighs instead of like a cool place.
Right. He doesn't have the Aquaman logo tattooed onto his forearm like I do.
There you go. He's much more of a nerd than you.
Yes.
Douglas is now there calling out Flair. He's wearing the number 3 on his shirt. What is that? Is that the triple threat?
I think that's Allen Iverson, maybe. But I don't really do real sports, just right. Fake ones.
Okay, well.
Well, before the franchise starts talking, on commentary, we've got Tony Schiavone, Mike Tenay, and Bobby the Brain Heenan, who is completely checked, cashed out, but is also amazing, and I'll go into that later. But he says, when franchise grabs the microphone, he goes, "The franchise!" And then sort of defeated and sad, he says, "Shane Douglas." I don't know why it jumped out at me like, you know, Heenan's just, he hates this.
Oh yeah, you could tell.
I think.
But that's good because I need that voice. I need that voice that's with me.
Yes.
Franchise goes, "I'm going to franchise Flair's ass." So my whole take so far up to this point is like, okay, they're saying stupid shit, but this is not really killing the company. They're just establishing feuds.
Yeah, it's absolutely what a wrestling company should do. They're telling me what I'm going to buy to see. And it's, you know, it's a little dumb. Like, yes, we're making fun of some of the stuff they say. But in the narrative, it makes complete sense.
Yeah, it's fine. And then Eric starts the hard sell for Spring Stampede, really pushing the fact that you're going to order the pay-per-view and get all new champions. Which,
yeah,
whatever. Like, at least it's interesting.
If somebody told me that was the hook for like SummerSlam, you know, but when we're recording this, SummerSlam hasn't happened yet.
Yep.
You know, and I didn't know the feuds or anything like that, I would be like, oh, well, I am definitely watching SummerSlam. I'm not going to read the results. I'm not going to wait for a podcast to tell me what I should and shouldn't watch, although I could.
Yeah, because viewer's choice happens after every major show, and Marcus and Tim kill it each and every time. They have saved me so much time and energy. It's keeping away from garbage. Both of them are super knowledgeable.
Me too.
And both of them have really become kind of some really nice driving forces behind the scenes at North South. So, you know, give them a chance whenever you can, because their stuff is top notch and they're top notch guys. Viewers
and shows. they have the best, sorry to everyone else, they have the best theme song on the North South Connection. Yes. Period.
Yes.
Period.
That is true. That is very true. So, then Eric starts talking about, because the fans want the best, Kimberly's going to wrestle Medusa. He goes, "Think about it, Kimberly. You've seen her in Playboy. At least I have." And while all this is going on, music plays that I don't recognize. I'm guessing it's an edit of Paige's music. It's so strange. Yep. And then, like, he's wearing a shirt that says whatever. Is that a message to us as the audience?
The same note.
Right? Like, why is he wearing that?
Yo, bish, whatever.
Yeah. Monkey. Why does he call him a monkey?
Oh, monkey. Fuck, that's what it is. Why? Well, I mean, you know.
Is that the...
Because not everyone is as evolved as he is.
No. Is that the pet name they call each other when they're banging each other's wives?
Oh, monkey. She's ready for you.
Monkey, switch up. Tag me out, monkey.
Hey, yo. Hey, yo, monkey. Put it right here. Oh, that was Russo. Russo's videotaping.
Russo's slipping in there too. At first, it sounded like Scott Hall. Hey yo, monkey.
Hey yo, monkey. I'm a stud. A diamond stud. Oh fuck, it's I've been sick, guys. My jokes aren't as good.
It's fine. DDP wants a match with Eric. And Tanae is killing me in this segment jumping in. That's an affirmative. I don't need you. When Eric says yes to something, I don't need you saying that's affirmative as though I didn't just hear it.
Yeah, he's like, when Eric says we've all seen Kimberly in Playboy, Tanae's like, her breasts.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike. He's like, yeah, he doesn't really say that.
No.
But can you imagine? He's like her breasts.
The problem is I can't imagine.
Not full vagina though.
Nope.
Not full vag.
Not airbrushed.
Nope.
Tanae is going to be the hardest in this whole project. It's going to be Tanae that's the problem for me. Because
I
get so much of him on TNA that like I don't want any more. So if there's any shows where he's not on the show, I'm sure I'm going to like the show a lot more as a consequence.
Well, DDP calls a. Bischoff Silverback, and I feel like somebody's about to get their ass whipped.
Yeah. Whoa, hey, whoa, hey.
It's so weird, too, because when he calls him Silverback, he says, hey, yo, Silverback. And then they continue the conversation. About 5 seconds later, the crowd pops. They go, ooh, this happens all fucking night. Did you catch this?
Yeah, it's very strange.
The like crowd sweetening. Yeah, the crowd sweetening is like delayed. It's It makes for great like television for me because I'm sitting here with my popcorn like, oh yeah, keep fucking up. This is great. but it's not enough to put this segment down because what the characters are doing is absolutely correct. But these technical snafus are what make Thunder Thunder.
Yeah, Again, Eric's wondering about what kind of stripper outfit Kimberly's gonna wear. DDP comes down to fight and he's jumped by Bigelow from behind. The New Blood attacks, then more people come down. The Millionaires come down for the save. Poor Lex Luger can barely move, which is sad. We're going to talk more about Lex as we go forward. The announcers say this is out of control 15 times in 90 seconds. Like, we fucking get it. Like, we get it. And then I just feel awful for the poor security guys that are trying to stop Sid. Because, like, there's no way.
But he nails the – he straight up jacks the wall with the chair, too.
Yes.
Like, he – And I have to apologize, an omission from our last episode. I've never seen this before. I thought Sid was done. So the fact that he's even here is, I know it's got to be for you, something extra special. It makes your balls tingly.
Oh, absolutely. I'm as wet as October. Look, honestly, if I'm trying to kill this company, I'm not starting with this. This segment was fine. It sets up the pay-per-view. There's nothing too shooty, you know? It's like just on that line. And it felt like, I mean, this is going to sound crazy. It felt like the setup for an evening of wrestling. Couple of matches introduced. Yeah, like if not for Russo, I wouldn't think anything was wrong here.
Yeah, it's funny because it was the first segment. So you would think we would talk about it first. But in all actuality, we're talking about it first because it was the safest thing WCW did all night. It was... effective. It did positive things for their company. And they're moving forward on a roll if the show stopped here.
Yeah. And it just so happened it was the first segment.
Yes.
Yeah.
It did.
But didn't hurt the show.
No, not at all. It was good. They will do things later in the show that literally make the first segment mean nothing for certain characters, but we'll get there.
Yeah, and look, as we go forward, we're going to be talking about this segment by segment, but not necessarily in chronological order, because I want to talk about – I want to build up to the stuff that I think is really hurting the company.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that that's important because we want to specifically trace why it must die. And so, and there's nothing wrong with this format. And going through it segment by segment, here's what happened next. It's great and all, but let's really try to focus in on – why things were positive and why things were harmful.
Yeah, so this was negative for Vince Russo.
This was negative.
In fact, I'm sure he didn't write it and actively fought against having it in the show.
I would. Well, he was looking for an excuse to get his Batman line in, but,
Maybe that's how they won him. Like, you know what, Vince, if you do this segment, you can call yourself the Batman.
Yeah. I'm sure his video store was just had lots of Tim Burton, Michael Keaton, Batman posters in it. And I'm sure he's very much a Frank Miller guy. He's got the shirt. I'm a Frank Miller guy. You know, I'm not going to get on tangent. Frank Miller's fucking insane. There's a lot of interesting comparisons because Miller had the Dark Knight Returns, which if anyone has read, you know, like sort of rejuvenated Batman from the place that he was in the 80s and still like feeling like he was a corny piece. And Russo, of course, like not single-handedly, I don't feel at all, but created the Attitude Era. Nowadays they're both kind of, they feel like they're inappropriate people.
You know what?
Allegedly.
You know what WCW is for Vince Russo? It's Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Strikes Again.
Oh, man. Dude, the Frank Miller is all over the place in The Dark Knight Strikes Again. He clearly has something against Robin, against, you know, her friends in the, you know, the gay community. I don't want to, you know, generalize, but it's just they treat Robin like, this is the thing that makes me most angry about Miller. He seems like a piece of human garbage. He seems like he really hates everyone that doesn't look or think like him. And I don't know why I'm going on this tangent. If you don't believe me, he wrote this amazing piece of shit called Holy Terror.
Oh, that's the sequel to 300, right? Technically, right?
Yeah. It's this idea. It's basically Batman and Catwoman team up for a night and fight terrorists that invade New York City. And this was written shortly after the attacks of 9/11. And DC put their foot down when they read it and said, you absolutely cannot use our characters. So he just created facsimiles of Batman and Catwoman. And it's the most offensive, racist piece of shit that I've ever read in my life. It's kind of one of those, like, you have to see it to believe it, like WrestleMania 2, just to bring it back to wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done. But he is I never thought of Russo as Miller before now, but now I kind of can't unsee it.
There you go. There you go. So anyway, first segment, not hurting the show, a failure for Russo.
Absolutely. The next segment that I think we're going to talk about is a quick little one, but it's also very effective for the company because, you know, if I've got an in with the mainstream of American pop culture, I'm going to try to point it out. There is a nice little segment where Sting is interviewed on the red carpet of the Ready to Rumble premiere. You know, they start with some nice crowd coverage of, you know, what's been going on in Hollywood. We have a movie that's all about WCW. You can't go 5 seconds without hearing the words WCW in this movie. You need to get out there. You need to promote it. So they ask Sting, yeah, you know, tell us, Sting, with no face paint, which is fine. Obviously, he's not going to wear face paint to the premiere.
Did a nice premiere?
Although, have you seen all the... like Cena's been going around to doing the talk shows with the Peacemaker helmet on.
Yes.
And I get that he's trying to be funny. And actually, I would dare near say his Peacemaker is one of the best parts of the Suicide Squad. But, you know, that's kind of the equivalent of Sting showing up in the face paint. So I'm glad Sting didn't do it. So Sting tells us that Ready to Rumble is Beavis and Butthead, Dumb and Dumber, Wayne's World, and pro wrestling all wrapped up into one. I would argue that that's not an accurate description.
No.
But getting the word out there and promoting WCW and the fact that we have our own Hollywood movie right now that just came out over last weekend is absolutely probably I would have had a commercial or a mention of it leading in and out of every segment. I do have a question for you, though. Did you notice the woman behind him?
No. Tell me about her.
I don't know if it's his wife. Because she's well dressed, which, and he's like in a suit and they're together. So I'm assuming it may be his paramour.
Paramour.
But I never heard paramour. I mean, I probably sure I had, but the Black Mask or Ewan McGregor says it in Birds of Prey, like a lot. And the way he says, he's like paramour. Cause again, he's trying to hide his amazing Scottish accent. It's become one of my favorite words. But she looks really embarrassed to be there, so much to the point that she's, like, I think, stepping on his foot in high heels, probably being like, get me the fuck out of here, Steve.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk. I'm tired of living in this fake wrestling world.
Well, and also they ask him the question, and you hit it verbatim. It's Dumb and Dumber, Beavis and Bedded, Wayne's World, Wrestling combined into one. But that's it. That he stops talking after that.
Yeah, and it's good to get the message out there, but give us a little bit more. It's what a colossally missed opportunity Ready to Rumble was, not only financially, and I'm not going to sit here and say it's like some great, but WWE would have at least had it to the point where it would have been much higher and better received at the box office, because I know Ready to Rumble is a flop, and we would have all gotten tired of the promotion the same way they do everything else, but it would have been on the forefront of everything.
But would they, though? Because WWE promoted tons of movies, and none of them really did super well. And if you say otherwise, I'll go to the papers if I have to.
No, but here's the thing. They had relative success. I think See No Evil was relatively box office successful. I mean, Ready to Rumble was like, it debuted at like number 8 with like 4 million. Like, it was a big clusterfuck. And I'm not saying that See No Evil made a bunch of money. But it was a horror film. It was strategically released in a time when the movie should have been. It at least made business sense. The Marine, I think, won its opening weekend.
Really?
Maybe. Don't hold me over the coals of the world over that. But I feel like The Marine, at least, I mean, I think it came out in like a September. Everybody knows September is where movies go to die. September, and it used to be January and February. February has gotten a lot stronger now.
Yeah. Gearing up for the summer.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to get the summer movie season started. But all in all, it's not harmful at all.
No, I think it's a good thing. It's good they have the movie. I just want them promoting it in a better way. Now, one of the ways they're not, there's this weird little interview with Jeff Jarrett that I want to talk about here too. Because he's talking with Mean Gene, and number one, he says he's going to knock Gene's liver spots off. Were you aware that he saw Mean Gene naked?
I mean, I've seen the tape. WCW Super Tape Volume 6. No, I didn't. I was blown away by that, too.
Yeah, what a weird thing to say to somebody. Like, I can't even imagine why Gene would be naked. Like, unless it's an orgy. Like, why is Gene naked?
Now I am imagining them, like, playing tennis. Gene's like, using his microphone, and Double J's using his guitar. And, you know, they're going into the locker room afterwards arguing about some point, and Gene just immediately starts stripping, and Jarrett doesn't know, like, he's like, I didn't know this was going to be the thing where we changed in front of each other. Hmm. But Gene's, you know, trying to make a point, and he doesn't want to be rude and look away and like tell him to stop, because he's a nice man, as we all know from his podcast.
That's right. But now he can't help but look at the liver spot because it's there.
Right. And Gene's like, you listen to me, you son of a bitch. I've been playing tennis for years. Put that cigarette out. You know, and then out comes the penis, and there we go.
Jane, come on now, Jane. Just put it back in the pants, Jane. Jared, the reason I bring this up is because Jared takes this opportunity to shit on DDP and David Arquette.
Yes, he does. And a good everybody already sees the writing on the wall with those characters. But, I mean, you've got the star of the movie. I know it's not George Clooney, but Synergy, fucking bring it up. And that's great.
Yeah.
He should.
Yeah, and in retrospect, again, this segment as a whole, I mean, besides the fact that, like, Jarrett calls Gene slap nut, I don't know why it wasn't pluralized. Does Mean Gene only have one testicle that I'm aware of? Or...
Oh, you know, his other favorite thing is Jarrettall slap ass, right? Oh. Yo, Jarrettall slap ass.
There's a moment on Jarrett's podcast where Conrad asked him if it was about masturbation, and Jarrett like was like, what, like the way he talked to him, it was like Conrad had said the dumbest thing in the world. Come on, come on, Conrad. Like, it was like, how could you? And apparently it's something his grandmother said, and nut just means like a crazy person. So anyway.
Did he say, Conrad, let me, let me tell you. Yeah. Exactly. I get it, though. Slap nuts. But I don't believe old Granny Jarrett ever said that.
No. She would call people slappy.
Oh.
I can buy that.
Oh. Yeah, Jarrett does say slappy. Okay, all right. For earlier comment redacted. Go on.
Yeah. So look, I don't. I think at this point we don't know Arquette's going to be champion yet. So I don't, I don't think Russo's doing a good job hurting the company here.
He's at ringside. We should probably mention as well.
Right.
When they cut to the camera or when they cut to the crowd after the fireworks, you know, he's in the front row, sort of not on camera, but kind of on camera. He's like catty cornered. And yeah, he's there.
Yeah. And look, they also
wait. Was that a yawn? Are you yawning on this podcast?
Oh,
sir?
Am I
keeping you from something?
Yeah. Sleep.
I'm calling JT after this, and I'm going to tell him how unprofessional you are.
That's fine.
Unless,
if anybody knows, it's him.
Unless you comp me some tickets to the performance of the Howard the Duck you're going to be directing.
Oh, fuck off. I'm not directing anything about the Duck. Howard the Duck starring in Hamlet. Yeah, so there's also this mention that DDP is on a private jet. But why is he then worried about losing his job?
Well, private jets were a lot easier to come by pre 9/11.
You think 9/11? So, Frank Miller ruined it. He ruined everything.
Well, there are a lot of things he has ruined, but I think that private jet fuel is really where the cost is. You buy a private jet, it's like buying one of them Randy Orton buses. Okay, it's one of them things. You're a sports you're a professional sports entertainer. You can buy a jet, you can buy an Orton bus, whatever. But it's the fuel, the rising cost of fuel pre 9/11 or post 9/11. How many times can we say 9/11 in a podcast about professional wrestling? I don't know.
Hopefully more, because it's coming up.
It is. Let's do one for the heart, folks. Let's do one for the homeland. It's just – that was a Steve Allen reference. I don't even know if that's what he says.
So it wasn't a reference to him at all? It was just something you said?
No, he says it in the you say – you sing the foolish national anthem. He goes, oh, you're right. Let's do one for the heart, folks. Let's do one for the – yeah, da, 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 right. Da. This is how my brain works.
It's fine. Look, I'm sorry I yawned and set you off on this tangent.
Yeah. Let's think about not doing that again.
I'll do my best.
9/11.
You know, 9/11 was an inside job.
Right, let me tell you about this. I told you. I got this website, 911truth.com. All right.
I don't like them putting chemicals in the water. You know the Wakandans have a metal in the earth that gives them special powers. And one of them eats a flower and becomes a superhero. Wakanda Forever is a tool of the Illuminati. All right, Eric Bischoff.
No, I love the idea of like Fox News like running a like editorial segment where someone is like fearful of what's going on in Wakanda. Like he doesn't get it.
Did you know?
Fuck.
Did you know there's a man that's been interrupting live shows from the rafters? He's wearing black and white paint and he's dropping out with a baseball bat. And this could happen in your town too. All right.
And them the goddamn liberals are telling me that I can't use a harness to come down from the arena. It's perfectly safe.
You know, the problem, though, is the liberal media would do the opposite. It would be like, no, the man who's coming down with the baseball bat and beating up the children, he's not actually beating up the children. Here's what he's doing instead.
He's teaching them a game of child ball.
Child ball. And you're just playing with the heads. This next segment starts, and I'm like, what? My first thing is, what is happening? And I know I'm probably going to say this a lot during this thing, but Vince Russo is in a boardroom with the Los Villanos.
I'm sorry. That's what I expected to be playing in the background, but it's not.
I can't believe they didn't put him in sombreros. Were these people on the show previously?
So I think they were. They seem like a Thunder. They're exclusive to Thunder. Hold on. Wait. I'm just getting this in from the draft ticker. Thunder has drafted Villanos. Can you imagine the Thunder Nitro draft? I think it was before this. I don't know, because I've also been watching some 99 WCW just for fun.
Just the
old Sid
more.
Streak. Yeah, and I can't remember if LaParc, they were doing the LaParca gimmick where he had like a dubbed voice before the reboot or in 99, but I do think this – there had been this weird time where they were trying to take the luchadors and make the, and I'm not saying the idea is weird, but they were trying to make sure that the cruiserweight division, the luchadors, were a bit more of characters as opposed to just spot monkeys, as DDP right. would say.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I mean, look, he doesn't treat them like spot monkeys. Eric does treat them like idiots, though, for being Spanish. Like, he's really talking down to them.
Well, and they should be pissed at Bischoff, because in the unedited, non-Peacock version of all these shows, he's appropriated the Desperado theme song, the Antonio Banderas film, as his theme music.
My God. Yeah, they should definitely be
pissed. I mean, shit. Yeah, they should be very angry at him.
Yeah, they're not. They're just sitting there taking it. And the gist is that he wants them to go and destroy Sting. And he's like, beat them to a friggin' bloody pulp. Again, whatever. This seems like fine heel stuff.
Yeah, and this is sort of another Common Russo thing, but it's one of the positive Common Russo things. The Vianos are not getting promo time. They're not getting any time aside from going out in the ring and being quote unquote spot monkeys. So why not inject a little character into them? I mean, it's not cultured, but at the same time, at least they get something.
Yeah, I mean, look, if I'm Eric Bischoff, I don't know why I send these losers to beat up Sting, like all the guys you have at your disposal in the New Blood, but whatever. They're at least doing something with them.
I think the idea being that the match proper is the three Vianos, I think it's 4, 5, and 6, versus Sting. And if Sting wins, he gets into the U.S. title tournament at Spring Stampede. And if he doesn't win, he doesn't get in it. So, you know, the heels are trying to stack the deck. They found a trio, if you will.
Yeah.
And that's why they picked the Vianos. The six-man tag team champions were unavailable at the time.
Yeah, look, Sting is – and then this turns into an elimination match. Sting has his – now, in your edit, is it Man Called Sting?
No, it's
oh, yes, it's that one. It's that one here. Yeah, the one they played for that video game when he came to WWE and then just changed the music for no reason.
Yes, and it has the little girl who says things like, he is here to defend us from the darkness known as Triple H.
Oh, my God. Good thing he finally defeated that Triple H and put him away forever.
He was terminated. He terminated Triple H.
Sting has to beat all three of them, and then Tanay keeps repeating it. He's got to beat all three. Let's not forget.
That's three against one, Tony.
Yeah, he beats two of them like immediately. They're like the fucking battle droids in the Star Wars prequels. Like, he's just cutting through them.
Now I want someone to please cut together Jedi's killing battle droids, and instead of Roger, Roger, they go Viano, Viano.
Viano. And then Bischoff can scream at them backstage. Like, there's a ref bump in this match. And then, I don't know. Like, the Villanos.
At one point, Sting hits the death drop on 4 and 5. No, I'm sorry, it was 5 and 6. No, it was 4 and 5. Actually, it doesn't matter. He hits a death drop on both of them and pins them at the same time. And fucking Charles Robinson does the 100-meter fly on the mat. He counts them both, but he does the fly stroke. From the Olympics, that little watch television program called the Olympics. He does the fly. He doesn't do the leg pump properly, so he would have been disqualified.
Right.
Kind of an amateur swimmer, so, you know. But it's a fucking thing of glory. You've got to see it. Somebody gif it.
Yeah, and then, so the Villanos, two of them are out. Then a Villano just hits, like, he gets slap nuts. He gets a slap nuts guitar, and it's Double J, just a Villano. Then DDP jumps him, and Sting pins the other Villano. Charles Robinson, who jumped before, now counts, despite guitar and mask all over the ring. This is probably the first of many, but are we ever, as this show goes forward, are we ever going to have a match that just has two people involved in it?
I think... And I'm being dead serious. Eventually, when the hardcore division gets fired up again, because I've seen some of the, you know, I've watched ahead, spoiler. The hardcore matches are usually kept to one-on-one affairs for a while, which is hilarious if you think about it, because it's the hardcore division.
Right. This
At one point, Bobby the Brain says that one Sting is worth three Vianos. You know, so it's a fair match. Mike Tenay disagrees, making him a math denier.
Oh.
You know, he's a flat mather.
He's a flat mather.
He doesn't believe in numbers.
You know, math was created by the Chinese to confuse the rest of the world. You gotta watch out for
the goddamn Warren Commission. I'll tell you what.
JFK.
You know.
This is a segment. This whole Sting Villanos. Is it Villanos or Villanos?
I think it's the three Calibreros. What's that Disney movie? The Villano. I think it's Villano.
The Calibreros, the birds?
Yes, yes, yes. I've never seen it, but is it good? Do you recommend it? Is it on Disney Plus?
It probably is. I don't know. I haven't seen it since I was a child. But there's a parrot smoking a cigar in it. So I don't know if that's necessarily the best.
Well, have you ever seen Bedknobs and Broomsticks?
Yeah, but it's been years.
Okay, I haven't. I just was curious. We were talking about Disney movies. Just trying to put you on the spot.
With obscure Disney stuff?
I mean, we... Shut up, Aaron!
Yeah. So this whole segment to me feels like... So it's not harmful yet.
No, it's, I mean, it gets, with it. So yeah, doesn't Sting win though? Cause he's in the tournament.
Yeah. He beats them all. That's right. He pins the third one with the ring. Like Charles Robinson has to ignore all the shit in the ring, which is something else.
Yeah. Doesn't DDP help him?
Yeah. He runs down because Jarrett's one of the Villanos and then DDP comes down and beats up Jarrett.
And Tony Schiavone, this is a direct quote, DDP has put Sting on top of Slapnuts.
Yeah.
That was kind of Jim Ross-ish, but yeah, he calls Jarrett Slapnuts. Makes me laugh.
Well, I mean, not a bad name for him. But like, so...
No, so Sting's in the tournament, you progress the one of the millionaires has snuck in. That's not bad. That's not bad storytelling.
No, I don't know what Russo's doing here. Like, why are you letting a popular character into the tournament?
Well, that is true because it goes against their modus operandi, which is the, the new guys, even though if you look at the tournament roster, which will be in a later match, I don't want to say new guys, meaning that they're like younger, but unpushed, but some of these guys have been pushed before, at least one in particular. I don't know. I don't want to speak ill against it because I do think the new blood concept is a good concept, but it doesn't make sense that they would have ever given Sting a chance to qualify as I think what you were going for, right?
Well, that, but also if you're trying to kill the company, don't put out guys that people want to see. People still want to see Sting.
Yeah, that is true. Even though he says it's showtime, folks. Do still like him.
Yeah. So not hurtful yet. Like this is maybe like, you know, Vince Russo giving a polite shove from behind to the product, but the product's going to be able to stumble through it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if Eric Bischoff was behind WCW on all fours and Russo pushed him, you know, it would be a little bit worse. But Bischoff was out back with Kimberly at the time, so that's WCW right. Didn't trip.
No, it was fine.
So, yeah, it was good. You know, we're on a sliding scale here. I do want to point out there's a cute little segment in the back, and I call it cute specifically because it starts with Sean Stasiak. We know him as Meat.
Yeah.
He's backstage. He's shirtless. He's got some tight jeans on, and a poor woman who was probably like an accountant at WCW is like putting oil on him. And you know, he says it needs to look perfect. It needs to look perfect for tonight. I need to look perfect. Keep saying the word perfect. Yeah. I wonder why. And she says she's gonna go get some perfect oil that's off camera, and I'll be right back. So she walks away, and the door opens behind him, and who pops in but Kurt Hennig.
Exactly.
And he's wearing a white t-shirt that has the WCW Exploding Vagina logo on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you thought this, but when he runs in, I thought he had one of those shirts that says, like, I'm with Stupid, and the arrow was pointing up.
Oh, God. I just didn't want to be wearing a whatever shirt. I was just relieved that he was just wearing anything other
that's
than
true
that. But there was also powder everywhere during the segment, so it was hard to see what was happening.
Well, I was glad that Mr. Fuji's not on the roster at this time because that's his main weapon.
That's what he'll go find.
There's there's powder and oil flying everywhere. Look, this is a typical backstage brawl that you've seen on every wrestling show you've ever watched. There's no way that I could sit here. Even though it's between Kurt Hennig and Sean Stasiak, who no one could give a fuck about. Yeah. There's no way I can say this is harmful to wrestling because, I mean, it happens 6 times a week. What are you going to do?
Yeah, what's Vince Russo doing here? Like, why is he giving us this?
It's like he wants people to understand that there are rivals that have arguments and settle it in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the product he's trying to cultivate here. And as much as I hate Mike Tenay, he actually does a good job of filling us in the story if you miss Nitro in this segment, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's effective there. And even though I jokingly called him meat, like they're just now he's just Sean Stasiak, a character on WCW television.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah. What doesn't make sense is why Bobby Heenan is dressed like Bobby Knight.
Oh, my. You son of a bitch. You stole my script, didn't you?
Yeah.
I have the exact same note. He looks just like Bobby Knight.
It's also the blonde hair, too. It just works.
It's like it's borderline gimmick infringement.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And him and Tenay and Shivani are trying to explain a Suicide 6 match. Whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and I was just like, please just explain it to me. Is that a Coke Zero you just opened?
What the fuck, man? You got cameras in my room?
Fuck, I knew it.
Hold on. What am I doing now? What am I doing now, huh?
Put those back on. Put them back on.
What the fuck? You do. You have a camera in here. Okay, anyway. But yeah, it is a Coke Zero. It's the now more delicious Coke Zero in the red can, new Coke Zero, which I still have not been able to taste, but my daughter said it was really good. I let my daughter have one occasionally.
If you can't taste anything, why are you eating or drinking anything bad for you?
Because it has caffeine, man.
Okay, that's fair.
I mean, I could make a joke, but it's just for the caffeine.
Right, because I feel like the advantage.
Because me and Don West clearly need more caffeine.
I'm going to tell you, Mike. So they start to explain it, and I just start to – I phase right out. I'm like, just when the match happens, just show it to me, right? And there's just so much going on. So we're going into this Suicide 6 match. I don't know who's fighting who. It's not clear.
The fucking talent doesn't know who's fighting who.
No, Candido comes out. Is Candido in the New Blood?
Yeah, he was in the ring with Brian Knobbs. So
last
you know in the last week, you know. Did you say last channel?
Last show.
Okay, just keep your wits about you, George. All right.
Just put your pants on and we'll talk, all right?
How did he know?
He's
fans right into the mailbag if you knew how he knew.
He's also
all right.
He's also called Hard Knox, Chris Kent. Why Knox with an X?
He looks like a creator wrestler.
Yeah.
Okay. He's got like a no. This is when he debuts at Uncensored. He's got like a homemade T-shirt that just says Hard Knocks on it. It looks like his mom made it for him.
Yeah.
Look, I don't want to speak ill about Chris Candido because he's dead.
Oh, there's so many dead people. You can't do that. We're gonna
he's
come across.
Dead? Am I supposed to care?
Right? We're shitting on John Denver. We're shitting on Chris Candido.
Look, I have nothing. For Candido. I have no time for him. I never have. I never will. He's completely uninteresting.
I'm just jealous of his girlfriend. That's all.
Does Sonny make you sad?
Now?
Now? Like, if you think about Sonny, does it make you sad? Like, the Joni Lauer story, like, makes me sad. Because I think that she really could have been something more.
Yeah.
And so it's like you it's a kind of a joke at this point, but there's literally an entire fucking episodic television show about how wrestling ruins lives. But Sonny is just like
it's called Monday Night Raw.
Yeah. No, it's NXT. But it's you know Sonny's so sad, and God, I can't wait till she shows up in WCW. It's happening soon because she's drunk or high the entire time, and she's not like she's obviously worth more than how she looks. Okay, I'm not saying that, but let's not. But the character is a sex symbol, and it's night and day difference between her and WWF and WCW. Like you can just feel that her life is in the shitter in WCW. It's so sad.
You really get a sense of how disposable the talent is in wrestling when it comes to the women of this era.
That's a great way to put it.
Because and I don't mean to make this a gender thing or anything, because I really do think that Vince McMahon, I mean, mostly Vince, but I'm sure the higher ups in WCW too, they don't give a fuck, right? Like, as soon as you're not useful to them anymore, you go away, and they don't care, and you could die, and they don't care. Whereas,
well, that was the presentation of the female superstar.
Yeah, and then, but it's worse. Like, it's not worse with the women. It's just, look, like it or not, the men have more value to this product, like at this time. Like, I think women's wrestling's come a long way, and I actually think now it's just as good as the men's on some.
Absolutely.
Sometimes, not always, but at this era, it was like, as soon as you're not the hottest, you're gone, right?
Oh yeah.
So
it's disposable. It's too bad.
It's an indictment. It's an indictment of their whole thing. I'm looking forward to seeing her though, because I'm always happy to see Sunny. Even now, if she showed up, I'd be happy. I mean, come on.
Sunny. I mean, yeah, if she came in she might wait. How do you know she's not here right now?
Because she's here.
You don't hear that slurpy? Okay, enough. I got kids here. So it's a Suicide 6-Minute. It's Candido and Purple Dust and who else? Who's with Purple Dust?
Hoovy.
Oh, the Juice! Oh, yeah. I think I'm going to get canceled because I said the Juice like that.
With a giant Jesus cross. It's so big. He might as well be carrying the true cross.
Or a bowling ball.
Yeah.
Because he's the Jesus. Hey, did you know Juventud Guerrero is a pedo?
Is he?
He had to go around in the entire neighborhood and tell everyone what he did.
Oh my god.
No, that's a fucking John Turturro Big Lebowski joke.
Oh.
Cause,
I haven't seen that in years.
Alright, I'm sorry. I just watched it a couple weeks ago. I spent a lot of time in my room over the last couple of weeks. I watched a lot of movies.
I've been watching.
No, goddamn. But I love this Hoovy character though. He again is in the height of his Demons King. Yes. It's so entertaining.
It's just a crazy person. So it's Hoovy, Hard Knocks Chris Candido, and Prince Iaukea, who has never seen Prince perform. Like,
no.
You know, just watch a video. There's videos everywhere. Just take 2 minutes and see what the man does.
I think the Batman probably has the bat dance video in the back somewhere.
Oh, for sure. They had to like restrain him from doing it probably. Are these are the six men in the Suicide Six Man. And I feel like this is such, I mean, this is kind of retroactive, but it's because I'm watching it. This feels like such a TNA move. There's six guys fighting in a pay-per-view. Just put them all in a tag match.
Well, their opponents are Crowbar, Shannon Moore, and is it Corporal Cajun? Oh, fuck. No, Lash LaRue. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry, everyone.
Sorry.
That's in June.
How could you make that mistake?
I know. Yeah, Lash LaRue. Oh, come on, baby. Lash LaRue. We got to save the water, boy. Lash LaRue. That is a really bad impression of people from the South, specifically New Orleans, Louisiana.
Yeah, you've really alienated everyone tonight. I hope you're satisfied.
Alaska, New Orleans, the right.
The Latino population with your Juventud.
Oh, no. But I love the Jews. So, guys, come on. Let it slide. 9/11.
9/11. Inside job. Bobby calls everyone involved the Young Bloods. Are they all Young Bloods?
Yes! Yes, yes! The Young Bloods. He doesn't even know the name of the fucking stable.
He doesn't care.
No. And since this is probably I teased it earlier. I'm just going to drop this in now. Like, the whole night, Heenan is selling, like, the pay-per-view. He's selling matches. But he's using the most vague terms possible. He's like, there's going to be a pay-per-view this weekend, and we're going to crown champions. Like, he doesn't know what the fuck's going on. He just knows the vague concepts, and he's still selling it like $1 million.
But he's a pro. Bobby's a pro.
He is. He has no idea what's happening, but he's a pro.
Another big debut in this match, a beach ball is thrown around from the audience.
Yeah. Crowbar grabs a beach ball and promptly does a back bump, exposing the business.
I know. And then before the match barely started, and David Flair is down here dancing in front of Paisley.
Oh, my God. I beg the audience to watch this episode of Thunder to see David Flair, like, do this, like, stripper Chippendales dance at Mrs. T.
Yeah. Now is he with Daphne or is that Crowbar?
No, he's with Daphne because she promptly puts the crowbar on his testiculars,
right,
and rips his back. David Flair is kind of a player. He doesn't crush a lot though.
Right.
But that'll become a character choice later. But yeah, he's straight up, you know, all on Mrs. T, the purple dust, purple but Lena, what, Charmel.
Why is he hitting on someone in front of the woman that he's dating? What's wrong with him?
I mean, you're gonna sit there with a straight face and tell me you've never tried to angle the three-way?
Not in this kind of obvious way.
Not on national television, you mean?
No, certainly not. Not number one, not on national television. Number two, not in front of the person. I never dated anyone who just does nothing but scream like Daphne too. You think this is a reasonable person? Maybe.
Maybe you should have punched her. She would have gone along with it.
Fuck, man, now you've alienated women.
Well, no. Hey, whoa.
Johnny advocates for beating women. I just heard it. You all heard it.
Okay, I don't know if you ever listened to your own recordings. You punched a woman and batted her.
Oh, that's true. I did. You know, it's funny.
Yeah.
When I record things, I don't remember. If it's not written in a note in front of me, I will not remember it. That was...
That's literally the reason my Twitter account, at Save Martha Russo, because, you know, he's the Batman. You need to save Martha. Get it. Got it. Good.
God, you're making me feel uncomfortable.
My Twitter feed exists to point out all the stupid shit that you say on national television
or national broadcast radio.
Yes, you know, so it's kind of like the 9/11 commission. We're bringing the facts forward.
The facts are going to come out. There's also a guy at ring. Who's the guy with the bowler hat on the outside? Who is that?
That's the Carolina Hurricane. Sugar Shane.
That's Shane Helms?
Yeah, he was on Nitro last week when Rip was like, "What's that smell?"
Dude.
You know, he got thrown into the wall. Yeah, it is Shane Helms. He takes the Franken Screamer later all over the place. Okay. Fuck this match. Daphne eventually does the Franken Screamer, which is her version of the Frankensteiner, and Heenan gets wood. It's great.
There's no match because the match is not enough. There's a match with six cruiserweights, and we're doing this one-act fucking tragicomedy on the outside with David Flair, Paisley, and Daphne.
Well, what's weird, too, is that it starts as a six-man. Eventually, it breaks down into a partners fighting against each other to try to get the upper hand. You know, they start fighting each other, and it's like everyone's trying to impress Russo and Bischoff. They do the spot on the outside where everybody does like a dive and they catch him, except for Purple Dust, who at one point just walks away and somebody bites it. It's hilarious.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
But Shannon Moore does a moonsault from the top rope, and Shivani accidentally says from the middle rope, and Tanae's like, "No, it's from the top rope. They're cranking it up to impress Russo and Bischoff." Russo. Fuck you, Mike, today.
It's the worst. Prince Iaukea is one eye patch or a parrot away from dressing like a pirate, too.
Have you ever sweat as much as the juice?
Never. Never. But I'm also, yeah. I haven't just consumed a kilogram of cocaine either, though.
At least not before a professional wrestling match.
No, definitely not. Definitely before my threesome with the beaten woman, for sure.
You watched the Three Caballeros?
Well, that was on in the background. It's all the inspiration. David Flair's presence is not explained once by the announcers, and none of them are surprised that he's there.
He's also wearing his world famous WCW UK tour T-shirt that he wears. Like I've looked for the shirt on eBay. I'm just gonna put it out there. He wears it all the time. To just have that piece of merchandise and walk on the street and have a random person be like, "Hey, that's the David Flair WCW Nitro UK tour T-shirt," which would never happen except in my mind.
Yeah, no one's going to know what that is. I wouldn't know what that is.
when you call yourself a wrestling fan.
Look, what I do know is there's so much fucking glitter. Lash LaRue jumps to the outside, and it's like he jumped in a kiddie pool. Why is there so much glitter?
Yeah, what's the King of the Ring 96 where Ahmed's wrestling with all the gold dust on him?
Yeah.
Like, I know that happens a lot, but this is next level purple dust shit.
There's
like,
so much.
It's on everybody. All night. I think even Flair gets some on his tucked in, you know, Hagar JCPenney sweater. That motherfucker if you tell me that his wardrobe is anything but off of like the men's rack at JCPenney, I'm telling you to go fuck yourself. But that's a side note.
I don't understand anything that's happening. Like, there's an actual match apparently going on at the time, mm-hmm. right? But no, there's all this other bullshit on the outside. So it's impossible to tell, like, who's winning or what's happening. I don't know who's on whose team. Now the tag partners are not letting each other win.
Right. Specifically, Candido and the Artist are kind of the big – they emerge as rivals, which – again, and to me, this is the reason why this scores higher points, and I'm kind of cheating in terms of how it doesn't kill WCW, which is why, because this match sounds awful, but it's very entertaining in a lot of ways, at least nothing else you chuckle. But setting up Candido and Iaukea as rivals within the division makes sense moving forward. So I kind of, that's why I gave a points for that, if you want to, you know, consider that.
I think
they're at odds with one another.
I think it's fair. I think that's a fair thing to say. But I think, too, so eventually Crowbar hits Candido with a front suplex and wins. I don't know how to rank the match. 2.5 stars? I don't know. Like, I feel like I didn't see any of the match.
I'm going to give it 2 for David Flair's dance.
Nice. Okay, that's fair. But to me, this is a match and segment. This whole thing is the exact kind of nonsense that's really good for killing a company.
Because if they would have gone out there and had like a straight up 6-man like trios match, I'm sure it would have been like a Chad Campbell, you know, 3-star classic.
Right. Yeah. A gentleman's 3, he would give it probably. But it's guys that no one really cares about. There's no story. It's just chaos. And like, if this was the worst Russo thing on the show, fine. But it's just a mess. And if you're tuning in to watch pro wrestling and you get this, it's perfect for Russo because you're not tuning back in.
Yeah, yeah. And you're also, if you just go quickly, you're kind of, you know, Sting's not out there like he was, we talked about earlier. So you don't really see anyone that you know in quotation marks. I'm doing the hand quotation marks thing. So it's like, Russo's like, this is perfect. Send the 6 little guys out there. Now that's Merrick Wimpy. But send the 6 little guys out there that nobody knows, and this thing's going to be dead by next Tuesday.
Exactly. It's a perfect segment. If you keep repeating this, you'll kill all these guys, and you'll kill any casual viewers that flip on the show. That are like, oh, what's this? Oh,
yeah.
Skip? Is he still having sex with that man? That's how we remember Skip, right? If you're a casual wrestling fan?
Now, would you say that the chances were more likely that Skip had sex with Zip or Cloudy? Your thoughts?
For sure, a 3-way. I mean, I don't know why you would even suggest otherwise.
I'm trying to think who would have... You know what? I'm going to go back to wrestling.
Please.
Okay. So, Crowbar pins Candido, though.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Which, I know you said
that's
that.
That's what I said.
But I'm sorry. I was tired. What do you want from me? I spent the entire day at a water park with my kids, and which was number one. It was awesome to be out again. But there are some interesting people at water parks. But my point is that they pinned Candido, who's the new guy, who's the only one that has. Now, I'm not saying it's a good character, but it's like it's like if Dino Bravo would have – oh, God. I was going to say it would have been like if Dino Bravo pinned the Warrior on that main event before WrestleMania 6. But that's only because the Warrior wins the title. And fucking spoiler alert, Candido wins the Cruiserweight title at the Spring Stampede.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. Why are you doing this?
God. But yet you saw me jiggle my thing on closed circuit.
Yes, but the screen wasn't pointed at your TV. Listen.
It's bad though. Like, why? If Prince Iaukea pinned Candido, I'd be okay with it. But they don't. But they're on, number one, they're on the same team. But Crowbar, he's not getting. They do say that Bobby the Brain, in a great moment of him not giving a fuck, brings up the pre-Russo Bischoff continuity and says, "I never thought I'd see Crowbar wrestle again." And I think Tenay begrudgingly is like, "Yes, the wall." Threw him through a table off of, you know, the uncensored. Like, yes, that happened, I think.
That's the only good part about the whole thing. Everything else is pure Russo, and it's perfect.
Yep. Yep. We're going to pivot, though, to something that, while a little bit more deadly, I think will make you very happy. We start in the back, and Bischoff and Russo walk into the boardroom, the same boardroom they had the Vianos hold up in, but this time they've got H2K, Jay Biggs, I almost said Clarence Mason, but it's the same thing, and I forget their bodyguard's name.
I didn't know his name either. I didn't.
It's not Ice Train, is it?
No, I don't think so.
Like the same actor? Yeah, I called him an actor.
Sure.
Let's check his IMDb. Hey, Siri, was Ice Train swole?
Ice Train told me to go fuck myself. Was not all right. Swole.
But it's great. It's really hilarious because before Russo and Bischoff walk in, Clarence Mason is telling them that they got to do something about the one-legged woman.
What is that?
I don't know, but it's fucking hilarious.
What is that?
He's like, in my head, he owns like a piece of property, and he owns like a small building in New York City, and there's no elevator, but a one-legged woman is moving in, and he has to put in an elevator to meet legal requirements. And he's not going to pay for that. So they just need to like get her out of there.
So he's upset. He's upset that he's having to have this expense.
Yeah.
Is part of his
expenses... he's the Gus Fring of two floor apartment buildings in New York City.
Is one of his expenses procuring wheat for Big T to chew on? What is he chewing on? Did they walk in a cornfield and he found that lying around? Where did he get that?
Oh my God. It is. I don't know what it is, but it's definitely doing something to inflate him, because Big T or Ahmed Johnson, whatever you want to call him, he's the size of three Ahmed Johnsons at this point. Yeah. It looks unhealthy, and I'm surprised he's the one that's still alive while Kurt Hennig is dead.
Why is he shirtless in a boardroom? Is there no decorum for Mr. Johnson?
Well, I think he has one of those, I don't have to wear a shirt all the time because of my kidney cards.
Right.
You know, he's definitely, Ahmed Johnson definitely, after the kidney thing, rolls up to, like, the grocery store, and he's, like, you know, probably more expensive than my car because he's an actor, and he puts the handicap sticker up and gets out, and people are like, oh, real nice asshole, and he's like, my kidney!
They just, and whenever he talks, he doesn't even have to say, they're like, all right, whatever, just please stop talking to me.
They're like, the people are like, I'm going to call the police. He's like, you're not calling the police. You're going down. And then this one guy who walked by is kind of like, yeah, you're going down.
Going down, brother.
You're going down. Dude, I can't believe that chant ever got over.
Do you need some wheat to chew on? Because I got some in the back of my trunk.
I need some weed to calm down because I'm so excited but Russo walks in and he calls him Tony. He's like, Tony, good to see you, which was a light bulb moment for me because I'm like, oh, that's why he's Big T. His fucking shoot name must be Tony.
Right. His shoot name is probably Anthony, like, which makes it even worse. Like, you imagine that man being called Anthony?
Now I'm picturing Ahmed Johnson wearing the Infinity Gauntlet being like, yeah, why? I'm Ahmed Johnson.
Inevitable.
Because, you know, because Tony Stark's name is Anthony. Again, this is how my brain works.
Anthony
Norris. He's like, and Bischoff's like, hey, nice to finally meet you. By the way, you're in my seat. Like, trying to flop his dick out and be like, I'm in charge here. And Russo says, you better listen to him, Tony. This ain't New York. And I'm like, but don't you want it to be New York?
Yeah.
But Big T is like, kind of gives him the look. Big T does the like the thing that every muscle guy who works for the little bad guy does in every 80s action movie, where they begrudgingly take their shit and at the end they turn on them and help Arnold Schwarzenegger kill them.
Yeah.
Specifically the Running Man. But yeah. So they sit down. Basically, Bischoff says, tonight we're gonna beat Sid. The mission though is not to beat Sid. It's to beat Sid. So long story short, H2K, no disqualification versus Sid. If Sid wins, he gets into the tournament for the United States Championship, which, again, kind of makes sense because he lost his shot at the World Title Tournament. He should be given entry to the U.S. Title Tournament. I don't know that it makes sense he has to compete for it, but it makes sense that he has to compete because he's one of the millionaires. So points. You know, like positive, yeah, positive it makes storytelling. Sense.
Look, I just want someone to buy Bischoff a thesaurus because, like, doesn't he say beat twice in a sentence?
And Ice Train is like, yeah, we do. Like, Ice Train's really trying to maximize his minutes. Okay.
Right.
But yeah, so that happens. We go to the ring. Sid comes down to a massive pop. I don't know if it's real or not. But and Sid is a fucking babyface now, which makes me wonder if Kidman and Russo could hit him up for the bounty that he put on Hogan because they took him out.
Right.
So, you know, does it constitute a verbal contract?
I guess.
The fact that wrestling announcers talk about it? I mean, would it hold up in court?
If Clarence Mason is trying the case, for sure. He's the boss. He's Don T's. You know,
well,
crossing eyes.
Okay, but here's the thing, though. I like the Nation of Domination, but I was always worried about what was going on with the Jays. Were they getting taken care of?
The Jays?
Yeah, the lowercase Jays.
Oh. No attention was given to the Jays.
Well, then I don't know how he passed the bar, because they deserve the same amount of attention. Justice for Jays. 9/11. So Sid comes down, he's got a big pop, he's got a great pyro display. All jokes aside, he's ready to be here. I think he's kind of energized to be a babyface because he was kind of playing a tweener, and then he was a heel. And Sid loves getting with the crowd, you know. He's got that great moment at Survivor Series 96 where he talks to Vladimir and he's like, "Who's the man? Who's the man?"
He's on fire coming out.
Stoked, but they fuck up the entire presentation because he gets into the ring and right as his awesome peacock theme is about to peak and do the da da ha 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 ha, ha it cuts and no. So H2K comes out. That's right. I refuse to call them Harlem Heat because my buddy Scott Hudson calls them H2K.
It's awful.
Yeah. It is, and I'm gonna fucking burn it into the ground, beat it in the ground.
Ice Train has completely changed his outfit.
Yeah, it's almost as if time has passed, but it hasn't. But Ahmed Johnson does have access to the Time Stone. He made a deal with Doctor Strange for it earlier, so things are afoot.
Live Stark. Let Stark live. Wait, I'm Stark. Shit.
We should not be doing that Ahmed Johnson impression.
Why? But it's not specific. It's specific to his voice. It's not specific to anything other than how one person speaks.
That is true. And he, well, would you call that speaking?
Sounding. What do you want to call it?
Yeah. Let me get to my notes. This is actually a really entertaining match from a standpoint that Sid is, like I said, he's on fire. The crowd's really into him. There's some amazing double team moves right off the bat. H2K, they try to take over. You know, they have the van advantage. They hit him with this amazing double clothesline. This is just awful. And then they whip him into the ropes and they do double thrust kicks. So we got Stevie Ray and Ahmed Stark doing like kind of the jumping thrust kicks that Harlem Heat does. Stevie Ray looks great. Mr. Stark, you should probably not attempt that jumping thrust kick.
What?
This is Jarvis telling you not to do that.
They both miss.
Yeah, but Ray, Stevie at least looks more competent doing the jump.
Yeah, but they still both miss.
This is a great question of ethics. Should Sid still sell? Say that three times fast. Should he just roll with it and be like, "You miss me!" We'll chokeslam him.
Fuck you! That's what he should say.
But we can't blame Russo for doing this. So this is why it's not the worst segment of the night. This is not Russo's fault. Well, he booked a competent match.
No. Hold on. He put bloated Ahmed Johnson in the ring with Stevie Ray in a position of prominence against a potential world champion.
I specifically have in my note, Big T, he literally has to take a breather after everything. And as a person who has been overweight before, I empathize. But I also wasn't a pro wrestler. I was like a pro pizza eater.
Yeah,
so
you're not on television with your shirt off in a boardroom eating wheat.
Yeah. Is that a buckwheat joke?
No, not at all.
Do you think that? No, not from you. Not from you. I'm just saying, do you think Russo was like, yeah, chew on this. It'll be hilarious.
Maybe.
All my friends back in New York will get it.
Yeah, we'll make
No, fun. I got black friends, Tony. It's okay.
Hey, man, he knows Tony from back in WWF. They're probably tight.
Yeah. I mean, he got pushed. It is sad, though. I was listening to this podcast about 1996 WWF and WCW. I can't remember the name of it, though.
I believe it was Was it Wrestling Warzone?
It was, and it was on the North South Connection podcast network.
Oh, my God. Every other Thursday on North South.
Yes. It was JT and
Chad Campbell.
Yes.
They're killing
They're wonderful. They covered the Monday Night War era. They're deep into the post Hog Wild. NWO is completely in the midst of everything over on Nitro, and they're gearing up for SummerSlam 96 at press time. A spoiler alert. Maybe when you're listening to this, they've already covered it. I don't know. Did JT talk in great detail about the thong swimsuit that Sonny has on?
Thong.
Who that just scandalous? I swear, Ahmed Johnson can't handle this. He's snapping his fingers like, who's the diss? He's living the vida loca. He's got infinity got lint on his. Oh,
you know who
I could do this all day.
You know who was living the vida loca? Was Nick Patrick with his mustache in this match?
Okay, so when my friend, this is when I don't know if you did this as a kid, but like me and like my cousins and my brother and my friends, we would do like wrestling matches, right? And whenever there were more than two of us, like somebody had to do the referee, I always made a point that when I was a referee, if someone did a pin, I would get wildly out of position and like run and jump over them like WCW referees do, and then do the gimpy Nick Patrick one, hand wiggle, two, hand wiggle, three.
I hate that count. Worst ref count.
It is so amazing. But WCW referees had so much like spunk and personality. Like they would, I don't like how Charles Robinson like takes every punch with them, but
yeah,
every once in a while you got Randy Anderson like out of position and he like sprints and like does a front flip and jumps over somebody and like as he lands, it's one. I don't know. There's some character there.
Yeah, for sure. I don't dislike the character. It's more lazy Nick Patrick that I have an issue with.
Is it lazy or is it like gimpy?
I don't know.
What does that mean, though?
Is it laziness that there are no, is he calling any rules in this handicap match? Because all four of the H2O 2000 are in the ring against Sid at once.
It's no DQ. Bischoff specifically says it's no DQ.
Okay. I mean, Big T messes up double clothesline. I've never seen anybody mess that move up.
After that, though, H2K somehow gets back in control. And there's this amazing moment where they back Sid up against the ropes and they're clearly calling a spot. And Sid visibly looks at him like, are you fucking serious? That's the spot you're calling? And then they kind of stall a little bit. And then Sid kind of gives him this like, fuck, if I have to. They whip him in the ropes and they do a double spine buster and they almost kill your Lord and Savior.
I was terrified.
Yeah.
I was terrified. Like when
that
happened.
It's great though. It's one of these, like, this is one of the, like, you have to watch this. Like this match has to be seen to be believed. I'm not going to say it's like a 5-star, because to me, 5 stars is like the ultimate shit show. It's not 5 stars, but it's a lot of fun if you know what you're looking for.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, just a mess.
To me, it's fun.
I just want a match that's a match. I just want one match that's a match, a wrestling match with two people.
You signed up for WCW Must Die, buddy.
Yeah, I know. Made a lot of mistakes.
Yes, you have. Punching that girl, for example.
She was kind of annoying.
Jay Biggs refuses to go up for a choke slam. I don't blame him. I like living. So eventually something happens and Sid gets the 1-2-3, I think, on Stevie Ray, because Ahmed Johnson ain't taking the pin.
Off a Millennium Bomb. We have to rename
the
power bomb.
Well, he is the man of the Millennium.
Yeah, but whatever. All right, let's move on.
But it looks like the wall misses his cue, but he doesn't. And he hits him. The wall hits him with a chair shot that's just as dangerous as a Shane Douglas elbow.
Right.
If anyone listened to our first episode. Because Sid is out.
Yes.
After this one chair shot. And we cut to Bischoff in the back, and he's like, no, this is not happening again. Well, I'm good. No.
Did you mention Booker T coming out?
Oh.
Because Booker T comes out to interfere. And I actually.
That's right.
I mean, this is interesting. Like, Russo should be fucking throwing furniture back in the room, right? Because the idea of Booker being new blood, but hating Harlem Heat so much that he'll get involved, is a nice little bit of nuance.
Yeah, it makes Booker a character that actually has emotions other than, you know, I'm on the new blood team.
Right.
It's like an onion. There's layers.
Yes, absolutely. I really like that Booker out. I think that's a really, I mean, I really hate it. I really hate it if I'm trying to kill the show. Right.
But like, right. No, of course that's not good shit. And I'm sorry for forgetting it. I was just so, amped up thinking about this, what happens after, cause it does tickle me. But yeah, Booker comes out, he helps,
mm-hmm.
Which pisses off Bischoff, which, I mean, if I'm Russo, I'm pissed because Bischoff is acting like the character should, because, you know, obviously he wants to keep Sid out of the tournament.
Well, hold on though. Cause what happens then is Bischoff disqualifies Sid because Booker got involved.
He does. It's glorious because he comes out to the ring and he pokes Sid to make sure he's unconscious.
Yeah, that was great.
And then he grabs on the mic. He grabs the mic and disqualifies him. See, I love when heels do shit like this. Like, they implicitly state in the backstage segment that it's a no DQ match, and then he DQs him. It tickles me. It makes me laugh.
Well, but here's the problem I have. Well, here's the good thing about it. Sorry, not a problem, a good thing, right? So you got this Booker nuance, which is helping the show, which we don't want, right?
Right. No.
But on the other hand, the Harlem Heat bullshit is awful, and the reverse decision is awful too. Because, not awful. Good. It's good for killing the show. Because if Bischoff. Yeah. So if Bischoff can just do anything like that, like change the result or whatever, right? Like if he can just change the result and disqualify Sid, take him out in the tournament, why give Sid the chance to be in the tournament?
Sure. And why let Sting in the tournament? Because he didn't beat the three Vianos. He beat two and Jarrett.
Yeah.
I mean, the logic is starting to fall apart now that we're actually talking about
starting?
It. Who would have thunk it?
Yeah, but it's like, if the heels have the power, I mean, look, this is exactly the kind of stuff you want. If the heels have the power to change the results at any time, and there's nothing the faces can do to gain any sort of an advantage, it's the best hero story.
Yeah. No, you're right. It is. It is. It's the true hero's journey. I think that we're giving them a little too much credit for. Well, it's weird because I kind of give them credit for like having Bischoff as a reverse decision is very funny. It's very entertaining, but it does just completely flaw the logic. So I'm kind of at a loss here because I want to see ridiculous shit happen, mm-hmm. but I also, you know, want the company to die but live. I want it to live long enough to entertain me and be bad. So I'm going to officially allow this.
Fine.
That's a new thing we're doing that I just made up. I'm going to allow it.
All right. You can allow it all you want. Bischoff tells off Booker backstage because he's mad.
And again, that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess. It makes sense.
Well, he gets punished later.
The problem is that some things make sense and then some things don't make sense.
Right, because all in all – but okay, so – maybe the Bischoff character is pissed that he had to go out there, and even though he reversed the decision, he's only in charge of creative. Can the championship committee override him?
Is that still a thing?
I mean, no. I'm really just trying to be funny, but I'm also trying to give the character logic. That's what we do in the creative business. We give logic.
Right.
You know?
Logic.
There's this – I don't know if you've ever, like, read a play or anything, but there's reasons that you do these things, you know. You don't just have Flint show up in the first act if he's not going to be in the second act or the third act. You don't take Russian to a medical facility and put him in a coma.
All this is very enlightening.
Yes, and I command we should move on.
Well, look, DDP is talking about the new blood. We get Gene and DDP, And what I do like is it feels like a personal feud between Eric and DDP. Like, he's pissed that his wife is getting inserted, and they cover the Bam Bam attack. So, you know, the original interview for me, I mean, there's nothing hurtful here. It's just pro wrestling. It's a blood feud, quick, harmless interview. DDP does a good enough job selling the emotion. I'm on board.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's against Bam Bam Bigelow, or Triple B, as we used to call him on the streets.
Yes, on the mean streets of Asbury Park, New Jersey. Bam Bam's also wrestling in a t-shirt, which I think is kind of sad.
Yeah, I mean, greater fall from grace, Triple B or LT?
I don't really know about LT. He's in jail, isn't he?
I don't know if he's in jail, but he did a lot of – I remember it was a big deal. It was whenever the Waterboy came out. There's that scene where he tells the kids not to smoke crack, and he had literally like just been arrested for smoking crack.
Yes. Well, look, at least LT still alive?
I think so. I mean, I think if a WrestleMania main eventer passed away, he would have been honored with a 10-bell salute.
I think you'd be surprised.
Side note, do you think AEW will sign Captain Insano?
Obviously. I think he's already signed in on the roster.
Well, they get all their scraps, don't they? Yeah. Hey, real quick, we are recording before. If CM Punk goes to AEW, I don't think it's gonna make a damn bit of difference.
Oh, it will. It'll make a difference. It won't be big, but it'll make it. I mean, what's the difference? Let's not go down this rabbit hole. But
I'm sorry. My 8-year-old son has been talking about CM Punk for weeks. It's in my head. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it'll make a difference.
But at the same time, God love him for being a wrestling fan. I can't imagine being a wrestling fan right now. Like having this be my. You know, thank God for the network.
Oh yeah, yeah. So we can.
I mean that. Yeah, he loves watching random shit. Oh, that's and. Cool. Yeah, God love him for it. But anyway,
This match between DDP and Bam Bam, like, I don't know what the problem is here, but it starts off, it's just a good match. What is this? Why are we getting this? I'm waiting for it to be ruined.
I think that there might be some sort of rule, a contract they have with Turner Broadcasting Systems that they have to just do a one-on-one wrestling match once per show.
Right.
But we're getting one. So here you go. Answers the immortal question.
Right.
Will there be a one-on-one match?
Yeah, until the ref bump, and then Bigelow actually stops to wait for the interference. Like he just knows it's coming. And then, so DDP, it's the cutter. Bischoff only counts to two. Double J jumps in. David Arquette. It's the Jarrett and Arquette and Bigelow and DDP. Chris Champagne Canyon shows up, which is obviously a great
Champagne
thing.
Champagne Canyon.
Yeah. Then they play someone's music with all the faces down. The New Blood come in. I thought this was fine. Like, I was like, oh, a match. And then, okay, here's the Russo stuff. And.
Yeah, I'm going to just read my notes because they're funny. Number one, is Bam Bam Bigelow wearing a Steak and Shake t-shirt? Because it fucking looks like he is. Tony Schiavone mentions Mike Awesome and calls him Michael Awesome, which pops me. At some point I wrote, worst powerbomb counter I've ever seen. You know what that means? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Let's see. Oh, Jarrett at one point gives somebody the Savage Crush Summit, which is what I call when somebody gets dropped on the rail. Hopefully you get that reference.
Yes, obviously.
And do you think that Chris Canyon looks like Jimmy King?
Yes, sadly. He's a more in shape Jimmy King.
He is. And at one time at the – like. This is – even though it's in the middle of our segments, this is the go-home – this is the end of the show. And Tanae starts yelling random shit, and he says, is this a new beginning for the New Blood? Which just made me think of the fact that what he said are the subtitles to two separate Friday the 13th films. Friday the 13th Part 7, The New Blood, and Friday the 13th Part 5, A New Beginning.
But the other thing, too, is that what do you mean is it a new beginning? You just had a new beginning on Monday night.
It's fucking Mike Tanay. I mean, I think that what he's trying to get at is that they have effectively, because the show ends with them like prevailing, right?
Right.
No. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Yeah, the New Blood's all beating them up. Yes.
Yeah. So they're kind of like the new beginning is Spring Stampede. Maybe I'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
Sure.
But I don't approve.
No.
I don't approve.
Me neither. But I approve because this is the kind of shit that kills shows. So it's good.
It is. It is. So it's glorious. But the in-ring match, I am not as entertained as the Harlem Heat Sid match, but
these matches are not matches. It's 2 minutes of guys fighting and then a bunch of guys jump in the ring every single match.
They're not matches. They're short form action sequences, pal.
Pal, you got that, pal.
We make movies.
Wrestling is a
wrestling. Next, one thing that's been peppered throughout the night is the mouth of the South. Jimmy Hart has been wandering around the building looking for Mancow, but he's going to settle for Eric Bischoff. No, he's really looking for Bischoff. And seeing Jimmy Hart without his sunglasses is so fucking weird.
I don't want him dressed like a human.
Yeah, I don't like I don't think the 3D glasses guy in the Back to the Future trilogy ever takes his glasses off, like even when they're in the Biff future and I think he's wearing like aviators. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is going over anybody's head, but like seeing Jimmy Hart without his 3D glasses is weird to me and I don't ever want to see it. But he's walking around and he's not doing his high-pitched voice, baby. He's doing his regular voice, baby. And it doesn't work for me.
Why did you do that to Hulk?
Yeah. He finds Eric and Eric's kind of giving him the cold shoulder. He's big-timing him. And he's like, why'd you do that to Hollywood, brother? You know, and it's just it's sad. So eventually Jimmy Hart comes down to the ring and commandeers the show for himself. And he's like, Eric Bischoff, I've been looking for you. I'm calling you out. No, he's like he says some insider shit about how for years he's been the man who was able to basically mend the bridges between Hogan and Bischoff when they would have an argument over like Hogan wanting creative control or money or something like that.
Yeah.
And so he owes Eric an explanation for why he turned his back on him. Well, it's at this point. No, yo, go, please tell me.
Am I insane to think that the last time we – so was Jimmy Hart with Hogan in storyline before this? I know he was way before. Because it seems to me the last time – he was? Because I only remember him trying to murder him with the Dungeon of Doom.
Right. So at the Spring Breakout episode where Hogan is teaming with Vampiro – brother, Jimmy Hart arrives at the building with Hogan.
Why is there any explanation given for that?
No, I don't think so, except I think there's a certain point. Okay, I was listening to a podcast about WrestleMania 9. I can't remember what it was.
Was it on New Gen on a Mission every other Wednesday?
That's what it was.
Justin
yes.
Pratt, Tim Slomka, killing it every second Wednesday on North South Connection Podcast Network.
And the thing is that that's the – I was never comfortable with the on-screen pairing of Jimmy Hart and Hulk Hogan, ever.
Oh, no.
Never. I am not a fan of that. So I've never been into this whole thing of, like, whenever Hogan is a face post-93 comeback, he has Jimmy Hart as a manager. That shit don't fly with me.
Yeah, because normally when you go with the manager, you turn heel. Like Powers of Pain go with Mr. Fuji, they are now heels.
Absolutely. God, that's such a great piece of work, isn't it? That double turn.
Yeah. Not like this. Not like Jimmy Hart coming on saying, it's been my dream.
Yeah, Vince Russo clearly didn't book that shit.
Yeah, it's been my dream.
So, he called. Yeah. Oh, baby, I got to tell. Who am I doing? What voice was that?
You sound like the rooster from the Disney Robin Hood. Oh, there he goes. Well, it's the sheriff. I think it's the sheriff.
Wait, let me take the sheriff. Yeah, the sheriff. Yeah, the rooster's a bit more sexual. He's like, let me tell you something, boys and girls.
Story about girls. Robin Hood.
There's a story of Robin Hood. Hmm. I'm gonna stream my guitar. Maybe later, we take our shirts off, see what happens.
Oh,
I don't know.
King John, it's going down. It's a great movie.
Anyway, that song doesn't start playing. It's the Kidman 7-Year Itch.
Oh, yeah. But,
so I love that Kidman theme song.
I do, too. But so they show – before he comes out, they show a camera shot from the Hummer attack. But why is there a camera inside the limousine?
Tanay calls it exclusive footage from the security cam in the Hummer. Now, before I started this podcast, I didn't know where it came from. Now I know exactly who put it there. Aaron D. Justice.
Goddamn right. Goddamn okay. Right.
Some people are the man with the plan. He's the man with the cam.
The cam.
Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to take a piss? You better watch it.
Don't. Jimmy.
Because there's two people watching. Chuck Berry and Aaron George.
Jimmy Hart has also either lost weight or has bought the wrong suit size.
Oh, brother. Yeah, he looks weird. It's not, I don't even think it's an airbrush suit, is it?
No, it's just a black suit. And are we supposed to have sympathy for this guy?
I mean, he has a soul patch.
I guess. Look, you want me on board? Sing Eat Your Heart Out, Rick Springfield.
Oh, yeah. Did you ever see that episode of the Real World WWE where Jimmy Hart like actually says sad things? I don't want to get into it, but I felt a little bit for him there.
I'm sure, but not here.
He had a little bit of personal tragedy, so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But he's about to experience a bigger personal tragedy because Bischoff and the kid come to the ramp.
Yeah.
It looks like Bischoff is about to, you know, talk some serious shit, but instead he screams, "Release the hounds!" And Kidman just runs into a dead sprint down to the ring, punches Jimmy Hart in the back twice, gently puts him on the ground, spray paints NB. That's what they did on Monday.
Yeah.
And stomps him on the ground. Now, everybody knows I'm a big mark for the kid. Why is this killing WCW? Why isn't this the number one segment? I'll tell you exactly why. You can't find something like more impactful for Kidman to do than to beat up like an old man.
Right.
Like this is not how you make Kidman look tough. And I'm not saying that there's a better way to do it given the crowd or the crowd, given the roster or the script that you've got for this episode, but just, I don't know. Like it, I don't know. I mean, I know it makes sense, but fuck, this doesn't make Kidman look cool.
No,
I'm sorry.
Just have him come out and cut a promo about how he gets to date Tori Wilson and nobody else does.
Honestly, yeah. Like, I know that sounds like chauvinistic, but I mean, the Kidman character is supposed to be like that good-looking guy who walks into a party and you're like, fuck, yeah, I hate him. No, but in your head, you're like, I wish I was. And he's like Mike Dexter.
Yeah, like nobody has sympathy. Number one, nobody has sympathy for Jimmy Hart, so beating him up is meaningless. Then Kidman spray paints him like, well, that's what he did on Monday. But like Hogan did that to guys for years.
Right. Jimmy Hart probably would have eventually spray painted his jacket anyway. So he's just doing him a favor.
He's starting. Like, why am I supposed to care about any of this? Like, I don't want storylines with non-wrestlers. I don't need them. You have a whole roster full of wrestlers. You can't get Lanny Poffo out here and beat him up. He's not hanging out backstage.
God, I forgot he's getting paid at this point.
Yeah.
But this does help set up Jimmy Hart's match in Spring Stampede.
Yeah, great.
Or does it?
Well, we'll see.
We'll tune in next time, folks.
Yeah, now we're going to go – like, now, look, we're really starting to get into stuff that's really hurting the show here. And we're about to talk about
– Yeah, this is the pivot.
Yeah, like, I mean, look, the non-wrestler stuff is really where – like, Vince Russo's already got enough screen time for a non-wrestler. Then we're getting Jimmy Hart. But now we're going into wrestlers that are in dumb shit. We're going to talk about Shane Douglas and the team package shit. The first thing I want to talk about, though, is when they talk about Bagwell versus Flair for later – in the Jimmy Hart segment of all things, they talk about how if Lex interferes, he's out of the tournament with a 6-month suspension. And like, if I'm Lex,
Heenan says with pay, completely exposing the business.
Exactly. But like, wouldn't that be a good thing? Like, wouldn't it be good for Lex to get out of here for 6 months from this bullshit of everybody shitting on him all the time? And like, also,
alternate universe, you know, this is where we get the variant Liz that might still be alive if this suspension happened.
Right. They get cleaned up. The other thing, too, is that who cares? Even if it was with pay, like without pay, they're literally called the Millionaires Club. Like, who cares if they're not on the show anymore?
That's a great point.
Like, okay, great. I'll go home and not destroy my body.
I mean, he can borrow some money from he has plenty of money, but if he needed some, he could call Michael Jordan.
Exactly. They're friends, and this upsets people for some reason. Look, Shane Douglas is fighting the total package. Shane Douglas's music sounds like it's straight out of Mad Max. And poor Lex is just so tired. Now, Liz strips him in the spotlight. I guess they got their music back and their pyro back.
Yeah, it's kind of a swerve. Well, first, before the swerve, I'm going to hate myself for saying this because I try not to say things like this, but Liz looked really nice. And I almost feel weird saying that because Miss Elizabeth is kind of like, you know, like you grew up like, oh, shucks, that Miss Elizabeth's so cute. But she's looking like she looks good here. I hate to say that because she's obviously more than just her looks, but
sure, but
I don't know.
You're allowed to compliment a woman still, I think.
I know. It just did something. It did, like, I just happened to notice that particularly this evening, she seemed special. Luger can pose. He got his posing back, but in a swerve, he cuts off his own posing to do the Elaine dance to Franchise in the corner.
Yeah, it's really weird.
He just does the littlest fucking kicks I've ever seen.
Yeah, and Tony says, now the total package, part of team package. What an absurd sentence to say.
Is he the team or is he the package?
He's a package. He's a package. And like,
what the fuck? Like, what does Flair get out of that team name? That's like if Kofi Kingston, Big E, and Xavier Woods were Team E. Like, Xavier right. and Kofi don't get shit out of that.
Call it a package of Flair.
Yeah. Or the package boys.
Sure.
Woo.
The penises. So Lex is struggling on the mat. Douglas has an uneven number of streamers on each leg. This is bothering me. But I do like that Luger can still do some cool power stuff. Glitter is still everywhere from the previous matches. And of course, there's a ref bump. Like, could Douglas not have hit a sneaky low blow instead of an obvious one? Flair comes in. He's killing Douglas. Flair low blows. It's just there's so much interference. Like,
it is every segment. You just got to accept it.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to accept it, but you better.
Like, Luger racks Douglas and submits, and the ref takes a submission, but Ric Flair is standing in the ring. The ref has zero questions for the dirtiest player in the game.
You have to see it, though. If the ref can't call what he can't see, Monsoon.
The man is. Why is the man in the ring? Get him out of the ring.
Well, that is true. A couple of things that need to be clarified for the studio audience here. At one point, when Flair comes out, Tony yells, "It's Ric Flair!" And Tanay lets him know, "That's the other half of team package!" And at one point, to get away from the assault of the little kicks in the corner, the Franchise rolls out of the ring, and Bobby the fucking Brain Heenan, the man that called the 92 Rumble, the 92 Rumble and the Rumble, on his back, says the Franchise has rolled out so he can take advantage of the 20 count. Aaron, aside from wrestling video games, when has there ever been a 20 count outside of the ring?
Isn't New Japan a 20 count?
Hold on. Let me phone a friend. Hey, Chad. Yeah. Chad, this is Johnny C over from WWE Must Die. You watch a lot of New Japan. Is it a 20 count or is it a 10 count? No, I've never been to Disneyland. Okay, thanks. Chad says there's a 20 count.
Nice. Well, Chad is the authority on that.
Hey, I really like Chad. I like that he likes star ratings, and I'm like anti-star ratings. Hmm. So I think I have a lot of fun with that.
Chad's the man. Chad's great.
Yes, he is.
He celebrated a birthday recently, so happy birthday, Chad.
He did. Happy belated birthday. Live. We're live, pal.
We're live, pal. So this if only this was just one match, right? So like we also get an interview with Flair and Lex. Luger's tank top is so long that it looks like he's not wearing pants. And then Flair's yelling about Hugo Boss.
I like that. That makes me feel special in panties.
Nice. Flair's yelling
What? Prank caller.
Flair's yelling about wearing Hugo Boss and Armani. Which is it? I just want to be clear. The promo's fine. These guys know how to cut a promo, and it's weird that it's interspaced between these matches that make no goddamn sense.
It's St. John's Bay from JCPenney. You're not going to convince me otherwise. He looks like every dad that's ever been on a business he didn't want to be on.
Right.
I know, because I've been a dad on a business trip he didn't want to be on.
So to continue this segment, Buff Bagwell, Ric Flair, Buff's hat is ridiculous. And then like Ric Flair comes out and Bagwell looks upset, but like he knows he's fighting him. Why is he angry here?
Look, here's the thing. I think that there's an underlying story to this matchup that Russo has inserted. I think that Flair secretly wants to take out Buff because Buff's hats have little microchips in them that can actually control whomever wears them. And as the Batman, Vince Russo finds himself consistently at odds with the Buff Hatter.
I see.
What do you think?
When is
anyone interested?
When is Ed Ferrara becoming Nightwing? Is all I want to know.
I keep trying to fuck with you. I'm sorry. I don't know. Do you watch Titans on HBO Max?
No.
Okay, well, fuck you. Moving on.
Fine. Flares and street clothes. The crowd is firmly behind Buff Bagwell. Nut kicks in front of the ref, but it's still the cleanest match so far. Until, of course, a fan dressed as Sting hits Flair with a bat. They sell it like it's a fan attacking him. And so much so that Tony Schiavone gets like, fans, if you come to the building, please don't do this. They go all serious on him. And it might.
Yeah, they do the Ahmed Johnson voice. Ahmed Johnson has been a terrible accident tonight. He was kicked in the kidney. And I have the sad news to tell you that Ahmed Johnson
has died,
has given his life for the folks who disappeared during the snap.
It's just so funny that like that's what they would say if a fan comes into the ring and beats up a wrestler with a baseball bat. Fans, please don't do this. They wouldn't be screaming like, what's happening? Of course, it's fucking Russo. Group beatdown. Luger comes out for the save. And then because Luger can't interfere or he's out of the tournament, and Tony goes, this isn't interfering. This is saving a man's life. Was Flair in mortal peril here?
Well, I mean, he's had multiple heart attacks in the ring, has he not?
I guess.
I love it. I'm fucking laughing my ass off. But it is definitely killing this company.
Oh yes,
that's why it earns a spot on this low on the list.
Well, we're getting to the nitty gritty here. They also keep ringing the bell for some reason, but the guy in charge of the company is the one wielding the baseball bat. So I don't know what ringing the bell is gonna do.
What would you do if you were watching a wrestling match, just any wrestling match, and you know post match shenanigans were happening, the bell rang over and over, and the heel stopped whatever doing, like, shit, that bell's ringing, I gotta get out of here.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize the match was over. Pardon me.
Yeah, like, at maybe the 16th ding, they kind of look over the timekeeper, like, oh, shit.
Sorry, guys, I just...
And they put down the bat and they run.
Sorry, I just kind of went off there. Like, I...
Yeah. That sounds like something that the internet would do in NXT, and then the internet would be like, this is why NXT is so cool, guys.
NXT,
they actually
NXT,
do
NXT,
things.
NXT!
Yeah. Listen, guys, it's so cool.
Yeah, this whole... Look, again, it's... Now you're using the guys we know. You're making them look stupid. You're making every match end in interference. You're killing the company.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I want to circle back to that interview where I made fun of Flair's clothes, only because this is something I want to make note of. Every time Flair... most of the times when Flair is about to like wrestle a match in his clothes because he's not comfortable with his body, he makes some sort of reference to the fact that it's going to be like a street fight, so he's going to wear street clothes, and all he's doing is drawing attention to it. It's like The Rock didn't go out there and be like, listen up, I've got some big titties
and
I'm gonna wear this shirt and I'm gonna beat your titties off your chest. Like, all you do is draw attention to what you don't want to draw attention to, right?
Yeah,
I don't know. It's sad.
It's very sad.
I wanted to get that out because he does his spring stampede. And
yes, yes, he does. We will talk about that next episode.
Yep. Remind me, fans. Hit me up at Twitter @SaveMarthaBrusso.
But we're not even at the worst death blows on this show yet, which is crazy.
No, I know. It gets so much better.
Was that a yawn?
Is
that a fucking yawn?
No, it was a schoolgirl giggle.
How
I
dare
like
you?
The bad stuff.
How dare you yawn?
No, I was trying to make myself yawn. Well, I'm about to wake the fuck up, fans, because we've got a Colorado Collision match about to happen. First time, last time, only time.
Bobby Heenan right away is like, what is this?
Well, luckily, Mike Tenay is on retainer to explain the rules of wrestling. So, according to my notes, the rules are very simple, fans. Now, to explain the rules of the Colorado Collision match, two men start the ring, and every minute a new man enters, elimination occurs by pinfall, countout, or disqualification. Let's see who drew number one. But yeah, so this is a match that only ends by pinfall, counter, or disqualification. I want to make that very clear. Tanae says, and I quote, I rewound it six times, you can be eliminated by pinfall, countout, or disqualification. Booker T draws number one. The commentators wonder if he was actually Drew number one.
His name is not Booker T.
Booker. Yeah,
he lost that.
That's right. He lost all rights and purposes to the letter T. Booker drew number one. The announcers wonder if he drew number one or if he paid somebody for it. No, wait, that's DiBiase. Mm-hmm. Or if he's being punished by drawing number one. Number two is a table with the wall.
Why isn't he carrying a wall?
I mean, have you ever tried to carry a wall?
I've carried risers, which are kind of a wall. But he's a much larger man than me. Like, I trust...
I think...
I believe he could carry it.
Did he auto-asphyxiate himself with the tie?
I hope so.
Is that how he died?
Did he die that way?
I don't know. It's a 50-50 shot whenever you open the door and find someone like that. It's like they were either really sad or they were really happy and then really sad.
Well, they probably
But that's not... I'm not trying to... That's a masturbation joke. That's not a suicide joke.
Well, he died by a heart attack, so. The wall.
Oh, did you Google it?
Yeah, maybe he was walking with a wall.
Or did you ask Siri?
No, I Googled. I don't have Siri.
Hey, Siri! Siri, how'd the wall die?
Heart attack.
No? Okay. She said he had a heart attack.
Cool. Cool.
It's a punch, punch, stop, stomp.
Yep.
Mike Tenay makes it very clear that the advantage into this match goes to whoever drew number six.
Oh, shit. Thanks, Mike.
The Brain thinks this is a great side note, or actual most important note. The Colorado Collision match is between the six men who were in the United States title tournament before the night started. So Sting is not a part of this, and H2K is not a part of this. Although, by beating Sid, they didn't qualify.
Right.
They just were the defense. So they're going at it with punches and kicks. Tony Schiavone wonders if this will tell us who the hungriest out of all the new blood is. I think the hungriest is probably Vampiro because his emo slant makes me think he might binge and purge. Booker and the wall go to the outside. The wall's got the table set up. At this point, the countdown begins, and I don't think the crowd counts along because it's a Thunder crowd. The show is saved because Ernest the Cat Miller is number three.
Yeah.
Did you feel the power when he came down?
Oh, man, I was like, I can't wait for this guy to dance. I just want to see him.
Yeah,
dance.
He hits Booker sans T over with a super kick. Booker goes over the top rope. He is not eliminated, though. And the wall follows him. The wall choke slams him through a table. The ref's at seven. The wall realizes that he has 3 seconds to make it back in the ring and acts hurt because the script calls for a double countout.
Yep. Yep, it's great.
Did you catch this?
I did.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
And I was upset, and I threw some stuff around in my house as I was watching it.
Yeah, we're getting there. The Cat is the only man in the ring, which means he's won the Rumble. I was begging Bobby Heenan to yell, "He's done it!
He's the champion of the world!"
yeah, and then for Tony to be like, "You stop it!" And then the Big Boss Man or Piper to run down.
Yeah.
I can't remember who does it.
But someone better than either of those guys runs down here.
Yeah. The fucking WCW trainer runs down after the 10 count. Did you catch the guy in the white shirt that comes down the aisle?
No, I didn't.
Check on Booker. It coincides with the countdown, so it looks like he's number four. But the Cat gets on the mic, calls everybody a redneck, and says, "I'm going to get my shoes and do my dance," which just – I mean, he's the greatest performer in WCW right now. He's then attacked by the other guy who's the greatest performer in WCW because Big Papa Pump drew – number four. Steiner literally takes those Cat's red shoes and throws them at him while he's on the ground, thus making him
right in the
Jesus of the
right in the Dioc.
Yes, he is the Jesus of WCW and suburbia at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Again, why is Steiner just not pushed as the backbone of the new blood? Like, why is he not the number one the number one guy? The crowd loves him. He's everything you want in like a shoot-based promo because like he never he says whatever he wants anyway. So if that's the style you're trying to create, you might as well just lean into it.
Yeah.
The cat at one point gets in control by hitting him with one of the stiffest super kicks I've seen. I'm surprised Steiner took it and didn't immediately like sit right back up and beat the fuck out of the cat in pure anger. The cat, after he super kicks him, does his amazing cat kick taunt, where he stands and does mini kicks in a circle.
Yeah, I love
and like
it's so stupid.
Oh my god, it's fucking amazing. But it's this is what Russo does though. He gives the mid, he let the mid card guys have personality. Okay, when Raw was at its peak and a fucking Too Cool match came on, I didn't change the channel because I love Too Cool. I was waiting for Scotty Too Hotty to do the work.
Right.
Okay. So the fact that Kat has shit like that in his repertoire makes him a good, like, wrestling character.
Sure. Yeah, for sure.
He does the splits and punches Steiner in the face. Like, the Kat is looking competent. But then Steiner realizes that he's Scott Steiner and
just kills
he
him.
Gives him a massive suit. Yeah, just murders him with a suplex. Yeah. Goes up to pose. Kidman is number five. Kidman does the shit heel move and immediately runs in and pins the cat after the Steiner suplex while he's posing, which is just a great chicken shit heel move. Yeah. That I really like. I don't know if Kidman should be a chicken shit heel, but
he has to be. So
I guess
small.
Him doing it, he is. It's kind of like a I'm gonna outthink you type of move.
Yeah.
Steiner notices, immediately gets pissed.
The announcers are also like, when Kidman pins him, he's like, look how smart that was. But like, what did that really get Kidman? It really got him one-on-one match with Scott Steiner.
Right. It's interesting because when he comes down, Steiner's like clearly in control and he tells Tori, I'm not going down there. Like, it's smart that he's not going to go in there and face, you know, the new blood shooter, Scott Steiner. I mean, it's a good character moment. And then that's kind of why because he was playing chicken shit heel in the aisle, I kind of appreciated him doing the sneaky pin. But this is so at this point, obviously you guys can all hear how much I love the cat, how much his dancing entertains me. Why is this the close to the death of WCW? This segment right here. Kidman and Steiner are in the ring alone. I'm not going to give you move for move because Steiner pins Kidman before the next person enters the ring.
Yeah.
Now we know that there's a 1 minute interval. So Hulk Hogan's rival is pinned on national TV in less than a minute.
If he gets dominated by Steiner to that degree, how is he going to survive Hulk Hogan?
Right. I mean, exactly. I mean, they have literally fucking, they have exposed themselves, you know, like they're, who's a wrestler? Has a wrestler ever exposed himself?
I guess Jacqueline.
Yes, they are exposing themselves like Jacqueline. They are just shooting themselves in the foot. I don't know what else to say. They're killing WCW.
Yeah, well, because you know what it is? Look, so then, you know, just to wrap it up, Steiner hits one move and pins Kidman. Vampiro comes out, but Sting jumps him from behind, and then Steiner just stretches him for the win. It's five.
Wait. This match cannot only end by pinfall, DQ, or countout.
Yeah, I know. Not look, look. I understand you want to infuse some logic into this, but it's not happening. All right, they're gonna do what they want, regardless of what they say. They're gonna do what they want. This is five falls in 4 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a cruiserweight like classic or anything like that. These are all your main guys. Like, are they?
Yeah,
are
this is the.
Are they all
this
made
is
of
the
glass?
Cornerstone.
Like they're being beaten by one move each. What is happening here? You're killing all your characters except Scott Steiner, I guess, but he's not even the most heavily pushed guy in your stable.
This is sub Survivor Series match logic, if you know what I'm saying. Like in Survivor Series, you can get pinned with a high knee, but you can't in like a regular match. Because it's Survivor Series, we got to have a lot of falls. This is worse than that.
Way worse, because in Survivor Series, a lot of times you get rolled up and you see the guy struggling to get out, right? And it's like, it's kind of sold as like a freak pin or whatever. This is just guys getting murdered.
When Sting gives Vampiro the Scorpion Deathdrop, did you catch Tanae's addition?
No.
That's payback.
I'm trying to not write down as much Mike Tenay, but it's going to happen, I'm sure.
No, it's glorious. So, yeah, I'm going to go 2.5 for the cat dancing. Nothing else.
I love all of Steiner's stuff. I can't rate this match. It's not a match. It's true. But, like, this is
no,
like...
No, I know.
This is like, you know, if I was beating a man to death, this is like a shot to the head with a lead pipe. Because, like, you're just destroying the person going forward.
Yeah, it's like you're executing WCW's parents in an alley for their pearls.
Yes. But then you don't even pick up the pearls. You just kind of kick them into the sewer. Like, how are any of these guys going to go up against the Millionaires? Like, can you imagine any of these guys standing up to Lex Luger after getting beat by one suplex?
You know what it should have been? It should have been a, like, I don't know how they could really, because they obviously want to showcase, like, Steiner. Have him wrestle, like, five jobbers as, like, a, say it's like a, it's a match that if Scott Steiner can win, if Scott Steiner could possibly beat five people, he's going to get a bye in the tournament. Sure. You know, and the gag is, obviously, it's like five jobbers, and he just wrecks them all in less than a minute, and now he's qualified for the second round. What a superhuman effort, you know, like, but that's, you know, that would be good for WCW.
Yeah, I know. None of it's good. And what else isn't good is this hardcore three-way dance match. Because this starts, and Knobs is in the ring, and I'm already angry. I don't want this guy in the ring. There's no point. And they only have a hardcore. They only have a hardcore division because WWF does.
Yes.
Like, you just don't have the guys to do this.
No, this is bad. This is worse than that No, I guess it's not. I don't know that I've seen that Junkyard match where they established the hardcore division.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine. Whatever. I was the first, at least, right? And then this is six guys, but it's not just six guys fighting. It's three teams of two, and it's a three-way dance, and the team that's left at the end will fight on Sunday for the hardcore belt.
Yes, partners will become mortal enemies. This is a Russo match, like, wrapped up in a bow on fucking night one of Hanukkah.
Yeah. Knobs and Finley are a team. Poor Finley. Hugh Morris is balancing a crutch on his head. I don't know why. He's teaming with Meng. And finally, Terry Funk and Norman Smiley. No wonder Meng left this company.
Yeah. I was so happy to see Meng, though.
Oh, yeah, I'm always happy to see him. And I'm also really happy to see Norman Smiley in full screaming mode.
I don't know why it clicked during this match, because I've watched a lot of WCW 2000. He comes out dressed like a catcher, and I finally got the joke. And I had never – I don't know why. Like, I just never got the joke before. Like, but I get it now. Now, I'm not saying it's funnier or okay, but – I get the joke now.
I feel they were they. I feel you've given it more thought than them.
It could be. It could be that Norman's just trying to protect himself from the hardcore division.
Yeah, that I'm sure. See, you're the problem. You're the problematic one. It's just so.
Yes, I am the problem.
This is so hard to rank because I love the screaming Norman Smiley character so much. I find the screaming so funny. But I just hate the concept of this match so much. Just put them in a six-way match and have the hardcore title on the line.
You're telling me that you're going to sit there and tell me with a straight face this match didn't entertain you?
No, because humorous is not one word. It kept saying humorous, humorous. I'm scared for everybody's safety. Knobs is abusing Haku's body. Knobs is going to get killed backstage.
Fucking Hugh Morris almost dies.
Yes.
Okay. Hugh Morris does. I can't even remember. Like, it. I haven't watched this match as much as the other ones, but this. He jumps off the stage, right?
Yes.
And he's completely out of place. Like, I'm. This is a fucking shit show. This is. I love this fucking match.
I hate it so much.
That's kind of why I love it, because you hate it so much.
They fight in the crowd. There's a Goldberg cardboard cutout, and Meng attacks it for some reason. Am I to believe that Meng can't decipher a cardboard cutout from a human?
I don't know if this is like a thing that the Meng character did, but I'm sorry. I love this. This is, to me, this is the cat dancing in the middle of a match. This is something at least that, like, if they somehow found a way for Ming to accidentally attack a cardboard cutout of different WCW wrestlers in every match, like thinking he was about to get attacked, to me, that makes Ming over to be a mid-card champion. I'm sorry.
Ming throws knobs because off a balcony. Tony screams.
30-foot drop.
30-foot. If that's a 30-foot drop, I better never see knobs again on TV.
He throws him. Actually, I have in my notes, it's a 30-foot drop for knobs. He gets thrown right out of WCW because I think this is the last time he's seen.
Great.
Unless he's on other Thunders. My Thunder knowledge is not as strong, but I don't think he's on Nitro again.
Good. I don't know why they're calling him Humorous. Humorous then gets a saber-tooth fang to the groin. I don't know where they got it. And they're like, he got gored, screams Tanay. Then Dustin Rhodes comes out and beats up Funk. Finley leaves. Smiley enters the ring and pins his partner, and he wins. What? What is happening? What the fuck is happening?
Okay, so just as I'm not crying, I'm laughing. There, I don't know. You said that Humorous gets like stabbed in the penis with like a spike or something.
It's like a saber-tooth fang.
Yeah. Norman, Smiley, and Humorous are fighting by this like giant saber-tooth. And Humorous are fighting next to this giant saber-tooth tiger head that looks like the fucking Cave of Wonders from Aladdin.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's for like the local, like we'll say minor league hockey team or something like that. It's their mascot. So I've got finally Dustin Rhodes and his red pants interfere. Shattered dreams on Funk. Norman pins Funk. He did it. Said Mike Tanay. Mike Tanay literally goes, he did it after he pins his own partner. Like, that was all along. That was the move. He did it.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Mike Tanay.
I my notes are like, what the fuck? Like, what the fuck? What am I watching?
Yeah.
What is happening?
Well, it's a Yappa Pie strap match. You can only win by hitting the fourth turnbuckle after you pin the person.
Hey, Yappa Pie. How do you have to say that so many times? The Yappa Tie Bar. Look, what do you want me to say? There's nothing more to say about this. It's just an absolute mess with some good people, some terrible people in it.
Are you more offended by Ming tackling the Goldberg cutout or 9/11?
Look, Ming tackling the Goldberg cutout wasn't an inside job, so I guess. No, control demolition.
Whatever. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have put you on the spot right there. We all know it's Ming.
Yeah.
Or no, wait. I can't remember the joke.
Wait, Ming caused 9/11?
Did
he headbutt the two towers to make them fall?
No, he hit it with his afro penis.
God, I don't remember anything I say.
Oh, that's great.
Look, I thought you were gonna say first, were you more offended by Ming tackling the cardboard cutout or the ridiculous finish of the match? And I would have said the ridiculous finish because I could see in a moment of insanity like Ming attacking a cardboard cutout. I can live with that.
Oh, what's great is that after he tackles the Goldberg, he sells like kind of being injured, and Brian Knobbs goes over to the concession stand and grabs a slice of pizza and eats it, and Tony yells, of course he would eat the pizza.
Have you seen his ass?
And I feel like that's an inside job, you know, because, you know, we all know that Brian Knobbs is fat.
So now just something to bring up here. I don't want to make too much time because we're trying to run a bit long and we still have our worst segment to deal with. But
yep.
Any one of these segments on a show with normal wrestling is probably fine, right?
Okay, I'm glad you can at least admit that. Because it was funny. Like, come on.
Yeah, it's like, look, the argument about WrestleMania 9 being the worst WrestleMania of all time, I don't think it is, but I think there's an argument to be made when every single match has a screwjob finish. Right?
I can get behind that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it is, but I get it. Whereas this, it's like every segment is this. Every segment except the new blood talking to the fans and Sting talking about Ready to Rumble. Everything else has been like madness and insanity and interference and no rules and we do what we want and tag team partners pinning tag team partners and Jimmy Hart getting beat up and Kidman getting jobbed out. Like it's nonstop madness.
Yeah. I, you know, it's too bad, really. If these guys don't watch it, they're going to die.
Take us home.
All right, so the worst segment of the night is Kimberly versus Medusa, and that is not a shot at women's wrestling. I'm going to sort of walk you through why I think it's the worst segment of the night. It starts with DDP mansplaining to Kimberly that she got hurt on Monday night, not last night, on Monday night when she got hit with a guitar. Kimberly tells him to think positive, she'll be fine. Medusa, I have here Medusa's theme song is about hard fucking. Does that ring? Yeah, does that mean anything to you? Yeah, because I can't remember.
Yeah, because she comes out to a song and it's just the sounds of people having sex. That's what the song is. And you kind of blew over that, and it's fine because we're trying to finish. But like this whole dialogue with DDP and Kim. Kim's like, I need to do this.
Why? Yes, I need to do this.
Why do you have to do this? I don't see any reason why this has to happen. And then
I don't know if the Kimberly character is like trying to pull her weight, like being the sense like, you know what, Paige, I can do this. They fucked with me. I can defend myself. Or if it's just bad writing.
Well, bad writing. Then she goes, work hurt. You're one to talk. I'm constantly begging you not to do so.
Yes.
Number one, who wrote that? Yes. Number two, that was the best take?
Yeah. I don't think this is on her. They got her the job in the 40-year-old virgin.
No, definitely not. They just had her take her top off. That's what happened.
Yeah,
That's what happened in that audition.
I know. So Medusa's hard fucking theme finishes up. Kimberly comes to the ring. Now, Kimberly is wearing a sports bra, which is a very normal piece of athletic attire for anyone that wants to wear it. Commentary is acting like she's naked.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like 1 second away from catcalling and like throwing dollar bills into the ring.
Well, and let's be
– I don't
– We can be honest here too. There's no way DDP needs to be stalking Sarah Undertaker here, right?
No. Sarah Taker is a very much notch below Kimberly Diamond.
Who's in great – she's in great shape. She really, like, regardless of beauty or sexiness, you can just tell she's in good shape.
No. Well, she's like a – I mean, is she a dancer? Like, I mean, I know she's a Nitro girl. I'm not trying to be stupid. Like, is she – was she, like, a professional – like a Laker girl or something? I might be making that up.
When you say dancer,
I'm not trying
you're not
to.
Saying – you don't mean exotic dancer.
I
believe so.
Like she's an entertainer that uses dance to tell a story.
Yes, although the choreography she gave to the Nitro Girls was like, I mean, like choreography that you learn in like year one of theater school. So I don't know how far she actually got.
Well, it wasn't what the TNA dancers do, which is an interpretation of Medusa's theme song.
Yeah, right.
So it's like the match is like 2 minutes long. It's basically Medusa acting like she doesn't want to do the job, but like I'm going to beat you up, Kimberly. And, you know, eventually she does a couple of like hair whips to her and stuff like that. You know, I guess Kimberly's doing a decent job of selling it. This is why it gets worse segment of the night. DDP walks out. Okay. And he gets in Medusa's face. Now, up until this point, even though Kimberly has been forced into this match, we have witnessed nothing but a clean wrestling match between two competitors in a sanctioned bout in the state of Colorado, okay? Diamond Dallas Page gets in Medusa's face, kind of does the finger point thing to her, eventually acts like, whatever, just like a shirt says, okay? Mm-hmm. And gives her the fucking diamond cutter. The crowd goes crazy, like he just fucking saved Martha Kent from death. And I think it's disgusting. Yeah. It's one thing to have, okay. And I'm not trying to 2021 this. It's one thing to have DDP like Diamond Medusa. Medusa can take it. Like there's a big difference between like him diamond cutting Elizabeth and Medusa. Cause Medusa is a trained professional, et cetera, et cetera. Like, but he's, you know, Medusa wasn't beating the shit out of Kimberly with a chair.
Right.
She wasn't choking her. She was using legal wrestling moves in a sanctioned wrestling match. And, DDP's like, fuck you. You're a woman. I'm going to cut you.
Well,
and he straight up RKOs her.
Well, I mean, Medusa was killing her. Yes, she was using moves, but she was killing her, right? Like, although I love that Tony said, a front chancery on Medusa. Like, I know that's the name, but it just sounds insane coming out of his mouth.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot that, you know, and at one point they cut to DDP before he interferes in the match. He's on the back watching the match on the littlest TV I have ever seen. And I think he might be jerking off.
Oh, well, I would. Who wouldn't be? Medusa looked all right, too. Let's not mince words.
Had to get that in about making fun of DDP.
The other thing, too, is that I know this might sound strange, but it doesn't bother me so much that he diamond cuts her. Like, because it's a wrestling move. I know that might sound weird, but, like, would you be more bothered
if
he got on top of her and started pounding her face? You know what I mean? Like,
sure, if he gave her the old Ralphie Christmas.
Yeah, like that seems like it'd be a lot worse. I don't know, like.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. And I do understand within the context of the established, like, fantasy world that we're living in. Diamond Cutter is also a sanctioned wrestling move. And, you know, it's not really like he's beating a woman. He's doing a sanctioned wrestling move to her, et cetera, et cetera.
What would Medusa have had
to do? The whole thing makes
DDP
look like a...
Like, what would Medusa have had to do to earn that diamond cutter?
Attack him first.
Like, do you have the same problem with, like, the Dudley Boys beating up Mae Young and, the other old one there? What's her name?
Moolah. Well, because the WWF was entertaining at the time. And I don't really have the Dudley Boys were heels, though, right?
Yeah. But they would get, I mean, but they got DDP face reactions for that. They got cheers for beating up. They got cheers for beating up Deborah and beating up everyone. The only guy who ever got booed was Double J because everybody hated him.
Right. My problem is that DDP is supposed to be, for lack of a better term, and I'm not comparing him to Hulk Hogan from the 80s. I'm not comparing a Dallas Page to Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan.
But what I'm saying. What I'm saying is he is the lead babyface in the world championship storyline, and I just don't think he needs to RKO Medusa without provocation.
I agree that it's weird, but I think it makes sense in the storyline because he's trying to protect Kimberly. Because his whole thing is like Kimberly's hurt, and she's going to get hurt worse. I mean, I guess he could pull her out of the ring instead, but I don't know, like... I don't want to advocate the violence against women, but
it's a tough thing because I too am not trying to be like, I'm so sensitive about what they're doing. But it's the fact that he's the lead babyface.
I guess.
I don't get it. Like if Hulk Hogan attacked Sensational Sherry,
but he did.
If he just
he did all the time. He didn't beat the shit out of her, but he always attacked her or threw her around.
Well, because the RKO is an aggressive face-cutting maneuver.
Face-cutting? Well, it cuts diamonds, so I'm assuming it'll cut faces.
It's a cutter. You know, like, whenever somebody hits one that isn't DDP or RKO, you know, the announcer, Michael Cole, has to call it a cutter-like maneuver. Like, it's a box-like structure.
Box-like structure. Not a box-like structure.
So I'll call it a face cutting maneuver.
Yeah.
You know, but it's very violent.
What if Hogan had dropped the leg on Sherry? Would that have bothered you as much?
Yeah, because it's that's a neck cutter. No, but to like do the big atomic drop, like the cartoon atomic drop, is one thing. To hit your finish, whether it's a face cutter or a leg drop or a Garvin stomp, is inappropriate.
What if Hogan's knee goes inside her anus? Then it's a whole other problem.
I mean, maybe it's a problem for you. I don't know. I'm selling tickets to that.
Well, if you want to advocate for that, that's fine. Yeah, but look, I agree. This segment's trash. I will say
that. It is. That's the thing. It's trash.
At least.
It's trash.
It was fast. That was its saving grace for me.
Yeah.
Is that it was fast.
I guess this is the segment to me. This is the segment of the night that person everybody's got that person in their life. That's like, oh God, you're watching wrestling again. This is what gives them fuel to put on that fire.
Yeah.
This segment. And therefore it's the most deadly,
I guess,
because the common fan walks in and says, this is that trailer trash wrestling shit. I'm out.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I would say, because I agree with you, I think that's extremely valuable and a very good piece in killing WCW as we wrap up here. But I think also there's something to be said for a match like the Colorado Collision match or the Hardcore Three-Way Dance, where not necessarily a non-fan, but when a wrestling fan tunes in and is like, what am I watching? Like, what is this? I don't even understand. So, and I don't want to say one is better than the other, because I actually think they're both valuable, but both of those are nails in the coffin. And I think tonight, I would say that the Colorado Collision, the Hardcore Three-Way, and the DDP Kimberly, those are three really big injuries to WCW.
Yeah, they and it's not just – I mean, I think everyone at this point has gotten that I like shitty wrestling, but they all contain leaps of logic that really strain – that make it really hard for someone to be like, oh, I love this shit.
Yeah, I know.
Like the 30-foot knobs drop, the – because the Goldberg cutout attack is funny. The knobs drop is stupid.
Yeah.
The Colorado Collision, you know, the cat – doing his dance is funny, but beating Hulk Hogan's rival in less than a minute is the dumbest thing I've ever fucking seen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to beleaguer the point that I made earlier, but again, I think that, like, I hadn't really thought about it. It wasn't a note or anything. I thought about it. It's like, if one of these segments was on a show with some regular wrestling, like, if there was this is not a show with something for everyone. This is a show for people that like Vince Russo. And
this is a B-tier show. I mean, this is Thunder. Like, this is a great example of, like, Thunder or I don't want to say SmackDown, because SmackDown at least
–
but you get what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, this is – yeah, this is the B show, all right? This is Rampage. This is whatever.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm making fun of AEW Rampage before it debuts.
Listen, people making fun of AEW, people that are watching Thunder – all these people that support Russo in this shit want WCW to die.